You ready to go? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 15th, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. We would ask if you have electronic equipment such as cell phones, please silence them for the meeting. We'd point out that there are emergency exits to my left in the front of the room and to my right in the back of the room. A slight reordering. We're going to open the meeting first, and then we're going to go into the public hearing. So would you please stand with me while we do the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson? Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
11 members present.
We have a quorum. At this point, I'd like to open the public hearing. It's a public hearing. It will be held at 5:30 p.m. in the legislature chambers concerning proposed local law number D of 2014, which is the repeal of local law number 1 of 2012. Which is to opt out of Section 487 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law regarding assessment for local property tax purposes related to construction of solar, wind, or farm waste energy systems. We'll open that up. If you've signed a blue card to speak at the public hearing, that's fine. We won't require you to sign blue cards for the public hearing, however. I have some, and if that's the reason you're here for the public hearing, I'm glad to do that. If you want to speak on privilege of the floor later, just we'll let you do that as well. I have Melissa Kemp. Would you please tell us what municipality you're from?
Sure. Hi, good evening. Is this on? Yeah. I'm Melissa Kemp. I'm the program director for Solar Tompkins. I live in the town of Ulysses. And so thank you guys for having this hearing this evening. I'm here just to say a couple of quick things about opting back in to provide the property tax exemption for solar and wind. There you go. So number one, just to give you a quick update on the program, the Solar Tompkins program launched just over a month ago. We're in our fifth week. We have 650 families so far enrolled in the program, so it's been going extremely well. This issue of property taxes has come up at every one of our 18 community meetings so far, as well as some of the lunches we've been having at Cornell and Ithaca College, et cetera. So it's a really important issue. People care a lot about it. They've told us on numerous occasions it's a significant factor in their decision whether solar, you know, is something that they feel comfortable with and makes sense. So the couple key points I wanted to make were, number one, the state of New York has had this basic policy in place, and municipalities have been allowed to opt in or out of it. It's been there since 1977. They just extended it for another decade at the end of this legislative session in June. And so there is tremendous across-the-aisle Senate and legislature support in Albany. And the reason was is their entire goals right now are to push renewable energy, and that they felt this was an essential policy for doing so. Secondarily, the property taxes are a significant factor in whether solar makes financial sense for a lot of folks. We're at a point now where solar often costs the same or less than what folks are paying for fossil fuel electricity today. When you put property taxes in the mix, that for a lot of folks flips the other way, and they actually cost more than, you know, staying with NYSEG and conventional electricity today. So that's one of the reasons it's such a big deal. And third, is regardless of what the value of solar is or if we're taxed or not, just the uncertainty about whether people might be taxed and what that burden would be in the future, we feel that that psychological barrier is actually just as important as any actual thing happening. So people are just concerned. As you guys all know well, property taxes in New York generally are an area of, you know, contention and strong feelings. And so this is something that just people are afraid of and or confused by, and we're just trying to eliminate as much uncertainty in that space as possible to give people the confidence to go solar and make this really positive change. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Bryce Smith. And on the public hearing, if folks could try to be crisp, but we appreciate it because there's a lot of people who want to talk tonight about various topics.
So thank you for letting us have this public hearing. I'm here to speak in support of opting back in. I'm a resident of Trumansburg. To piggyback a little bit on what Melissa had just said, solar is an extremely rapidly growing technology that right now it represents about 1.5% of owner-occupied homes. The goal of Solar Tompkins is to double that within 1 year. Even if there are no further increases, even if it just continues to grow at the rate that it was before Solar Tompkins, which is unlikely, within about 5 years, you're looking at not 1.5% of owner-occupied homes, but somewhere between 10 and 15%. So the next few years are a really important part, a time where a lot of people will be going solar and a lot of people will be impacted by the decision that the county makes tonight. I wanted to briefly discuss the questions of wind, because I know that a big piece of the original decision to opt out had to do with larger scale development like the Black Oak Wind Farm. And I just wanted to note that there really is no need for communities to be opted out in order to have confidence that they're going to be able to negotiate strong pilot agreements, payment in lieu of taxes with the wind farms. This is very common across the state. In fact, Tompkins County is one of only six counties that have actually opted out. They're the only county that has opted out of the property tax exemption in the last 7 years. And in that time, almost 80% of the wind and more than 90% of all the solar that's gone in has gone in. And so no other county has opted out, and it's not for lack of renewable development. If you look at the states, the counties where New York's wind farms are, there are 9 counties that now host utility-scale wind farms. Only 2 of those 9 counties have opted out of the tax exemption. The 7 counties that are still opted into the tax exemption account for almost 70% of the wind development in the state. And what's interesting is if you look at the counties where they have remained opted out of the property tax, opted into the property tax exemption, they actually have negotiated pilot agreements that are higher than the counties that are opted out of the exemption. So 2 of the biggest counties, Lewis and Wyoming County, and if you look at the wind farms in their state, we looked at 5 representative wind farms. Their pilot agreements range somewhere between $8,000 and $9,000 a megawatt. And just this morning in the Ithaca Journal, there was an article about Black Oak negotiating and looking for $8,300 a megawatt, and so right in the heart of what is common. Clinton County is one of the counties with large wind that has opted out of the property tax exemption the way Tompkins currently is. And their pilot agreements for their wind farms are typically around $6,000 a megawatt. And so there is no concern looking at the precedents across the state that opting back in will somehow prejudice the county when it comes to negotiating a pilot agreement with Black Oak or any future wind farm. Iberdrola is one of the largest wind developers in the state, and their 5 plants that they're proposed around the state have publicly budgeted between $8,000 and $9,000 a megawatt for pilot agreements in communities. And every one of those 5 facilities are in counties that have remained opted into the property tax exemption. And so I would strongly encourage you to opt back in to help support solar electric at the residential scale, and to do so with confidence that there's still the opportunity, if the county wishes to negotiate pilot agreements with larger facilities, that is well within the norm across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Wilson.
Good evening. Thank you for having this hearing. I'm here to support the solar exemption. I'm not going to try and distinguish between opting in and opting out. That confuses me. I'm an old person now. I live in Dryden, and I live on a fixed income, my wife and I together. We would like to be joining the county in its laudable efforts to reduce the carbon footprint of the county and all of its residents, and we are considering a solar installation, or would like to. However, if the tax exemption is not in place, that will make it undoable for us at this time. So it's significant, I think, and I'd like you to consider that others in the same situation as we who have a fixed income do need the assurance of having the solar exemption in order to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Martin Hatch.
Good afternoon. My name is Martin Hatch. I'm from the town of Dryden. I'm in support of the county opting back into the local law tax-exempt solar, wind, and farm waste. I'm interested in that dimension as well. I've had solar on my barn for the past 10 years, and it's been very useful in advancing, and one could say, the goals that now the county has espoused so strongly of carbon, decreasing carbon emissions. And the farm side of it is interesting to me because I've been in contact with farmers around the area, and they're encouraged to look into matters which would reduce emissions, and opting back in would continue that encouraging trend. I think this is an issue, if we want to say, that's a matter of survival, not for the county alone, but for the county in the state, in the nation, and the world. And that's why we are advancing these goals in the county. And to think that we would step back from that discourage it is rather regrettable. So I encourage you to opt back in. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. Mark Whitmer.
Thank you. My name is Mark Whitmer. I'm from the town of Caroline. I was the project manager for last year's program in Danby, Dryden, and Caroline. And I saw people in our program of modest means who considered it a life dream to be able to obtain a solar installation on their own. And that life dream was based on their desire to personally address the issue of climate change. So I think, I applaud the commitment of the county to addressing climate change, and I urge you to opt back into the tax exemption so that we can keep momentum behind the effort to move us forward towards a renewable energy future. Thank you.
Thank you. Yossi Brosnick.
Yes, hi. Yossi Brosnick. I'm a partner and senior engineer at Tatum Engineering and live in the city of Ithaca. Just wanted to encourage you to opt back in. This tax exemption offers surety for those who are making large, what are often large financial investments in a renewable energy system in order to reduce their carbon footprint and their use of fossil fuels. So I'd like to encourage you to opt back in.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this topic at the public hearing? You didn't have to file a blue card for us to do that. If anyone wants to speak on this opt-out of the assessment of repealing that opt-out, please step to the microphone. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Nancy Emerson. I live on West Hill, and I put in a solar system that's providing all of my electricity. I put it in about 8 years ago, and what made it affordable for me was at that time tax credits, some rebates, and a very cheap loan that I'm paying off. So it made it doable. It made it wonderful. it's nearly paid off, and it's going to continue to pay for my electricity going forward. So anything we can do to support people financially, I think, is a great thing. And I'm hoping if your grandchildren don't cough, it's because I didn't pollute the air.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Chris Kale from Town of Ulysses. I recently had an interview with Tatum Engineering as a part of the Solar Tompkins project and was running numbers because, you know, ours are very close as to whether it would benefit us financially or not. And one of the questions I asked of them was whether they could guarantee me that that I would have a property tax exemption on that because we aren't in no position to pay more for our property taxes. And they had to tell me no at that time, although they said that you were considering rescinding that. So I would certainly urge that so that people are able to do the same thing the county wants to do.
Anyone else on this topic for the public hearing? Yes, sir.
I'm Guillermo Metz. I'm a resident of Danby. I work at Cooperative Extension with Renewables, and I'm supporting also the Solar Tompkins program. But I would also urge the legislature to consider opting back into the exemption in a strong show of support for the need for renewables and sort of more of a holistic approach to our need to adopt more renewables in the county and the other efforts that are going on in the county, and to look at some of those creative ways like the payments in lieu of taxes that have been talked about that can tease away the large projects that are primarily for-profit as opposed to the smaller residential and small commercial projects that are done on a very really not for profit. They're done for various reasons that so no one's making a lot of money off of those. And also to just show the support for renewables and the need for them in the community. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Brent Kotzman. I am a realtor with Warren Real Estate. I also live in the town of Ithaca and am a founding member of the Ithaca Green Building Alliance and a builder and designer myself. I simply want to say, because I can't say it nearly as eloquently as the people before me, that that I do support opting back in to the property exemption, property tax exemption. Being in the real estate industry, we keep close tabs on trends and interests and concerns about property taxes. And clearly giving an opportunity to increase the value of property at the potential discouragement of solar adoption doesn't seem prudent at all. So I encourage you to opt back in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on the public hearing on the resolution to repeal? Yes, go ahead.
I want to thank you for hearing us out. My name is Mary Alice Kobler. I'm from Caroline, and this is a make-it-or-break-it decision for really a lot of people, and I hope that you understand that and will push us forward into a renewable future. Thank you.
Thanks. Any other comments? Not seeing any. Was that a hand over there?
Yes.
No, I think it was a knitter. Excuse me. Thank you. Then we'll close the public hearing. I have a request from Legislator Chalk that we move up the resolution having to do with this at this point.
Open the meeting.
I'm sorry? The meeting's been open. Any objection to that? Nathan Shinagawa, will you move this resolution then?
I can move this resolution. I'd like to move repealing resolutions. Oh, wait, nope, that's the wrong one. Where did I do it? I have too many resolutions in front of me. Here we go. Repeal of local law, that's the right repeal one, okay. 1 of 2012, opt out of Section 487 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law regarding assessment for local property tax purposes related to construction of solar, wind, or farm waste energy systems. And I so move.
Seconded by Legislator Chalk. Discussion. Carol?
Yeah, I just want to add one minor point to what's been said by people that we heard, which is that the sign-up period for the folks who are deciding, the sign-up period to opt into the program, which means you have your house evaluated and then make a decision as to whether the finances work for you and you're going to move forward and your house is appropriate, is the end of July, so that doing this now, you know, may make a difference to folks.
Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Ithaca Journal article today about the wind farm, the Enfield wind farm, and it's a little bit, it's relevant to this topic. I just wanted to be clear that the way I read this article, it's actually incorrect. The wind farm is not seeking tax breaks, that they're seeking a fair and predictable tax payment that would benefit the community. This is negotiated as, you know, so the IDA negotiates these kinds of payments in lieu of tax agreements, and this literally, it's not a break in any way. They would pay $8,300 a year for each megawatt of electricity, so it's going to end up being, would end up being $98,770 a year for 15 years with increases set included for inflation. So this is not in any way intended to be a tax break. This is they have always asked to negotiate with the IDA to set a fair and predictable tax level, and this is what's been negotiated, and there's a public hearing on that coming up.
Anyone else? Peter Stein.
I have a question. I hope there's someone in the room that can answer it. When we talk about a pilot of so many dollars per megawatt, what does that mean when they use the word megawatt? Is that the peak amount of power that wind farm gives, or is it the average power that it gives?
Jonathan?
It's neither of those. It is the capacity of the for example, at Black Oak, each of those windmills will have the capacity to produce 1.7 megawatts.
Try to use your mic.
I was saying, for example, at Black Oak, each windmill will have the capacity to produce 1.7 megawatts. If operating at 100% efficiency, they never operate at 100% efficiency. So in essence, it's a theoretical number. It's a capacity number. What it would produce in an hour if it operated perfectly at 100% capacity, which it never does.
So it really doesn't have anything to do with the amount of money they're going to make, because if it had to do with that, it would be sort of the average megawatt hours that are produced by it.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Just wondered.
Martha?
Well, the figure was developed by looking at other pilots around the state, and to say that, you know, that's the capacity, then in a sense you're sort of saying the most income possible to be generated is going to be taxed. So in a sense it's a fairly generous to the taxpayer calculation.
Jim Dennis.
Yeah, I think the important thing to take away from this meeting is the Black Oak Wind Farm has negotiated with the IDA for since 2012, and we've arrived at a number. It's a fair number, as someone said back here. It's somewhere between 6 and 9, and they are going to go forward with that number in mind as they look to get investors for their $40 million project and have a customer for their power that they generate. So please don't confuse what we're doing with the exempting and that project, because they're good for that number right now and will be no matter what we do in terms of the exemption.
Mike Sigler.
And I want to thank Jim Dennis for saying that, because that was kind of the make or break issue for me. I also want to mention that, once again, we don't actually increase
according to the assessment department people's assessment.
Use your microphone, please.
People's assessment when they actually do that. However, perception is reality. I understand we're trying to sell this. I understand that people think that it will. Even though we don't, I get it. So, you know, I'll be voting for this. So I want to thank you all for coming, too. This is a great turnout.
Anything else? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution to repeal the previous local law, please raise your hand. All those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for coming and talking. We're going to go back into the regular agenda. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm going to go to the lectern. Can you hear me? There we go. Is Greg Potter here or someone from IT? The county is a member of the State Association of Counties called, we call it NYSAC, but there's also a national association, which is even more impressive. It's called NACO. And we have received word that Tompkins County has been recognized as one of the nation's top digital counties by the Center for Digital Government and the National Association of Counties. They've given us an award. The award identifies best technology practices among counties nationwide, recognizing leading examples of counties that use technology to improve services and boost efficiencies. In particular, the nomination here has put us in the top 10 counties in the whole United States, which I think is pretty impressive. And that is due to the efforts spearheaded out of the county clerk's office by Deputy Clerk Maureen Reynolds and by Greg Potter and his staff in information technology. And we are very proud of the effort that you have done, Maureen and Greg, to digitize county records, saving us millions of dollars, literally, and also reaching out to our other municipalities in the county to help them share in the kind of good things that we're doing and saving them some money, too. So I actually have the award that's been sent to us from the National Association of Counties, and we are sixth place, but that's pretty darn good nationwide. And Maureen, we want to say thank you for your efforts.
Just wanted to let everybody know this is not just my work. It is a collaboration, not just with our department and ITS, but all county departments and our local municipal partners. And I did leave a note on Joe's desk today that next year I'm going to get first place. So.
All right.
Thank you. That's pretty nice to have that kind of an award from the nationwide organization. We don't plan to have an executive session tonight unless Jonathan saw anything that we need one for.
No.
And we're going to go to privilege of the floor for the public next. And if anyone wants to speak who hasn't sent up a blue card, please do that, because the only ones we're going to call on are folks who have signed blue cards. I'm going to read the rules of privilege of the floor. When you sign the card, you are saying that you agree to a three-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees, other than elected officials. You are agreeing after 3 minutes that you'll yield the microphone and the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and am asked to leave and are asked to leave the chambers, you will leave the chambers. Hopefully none of that needs anything more than just reading. We will have each of you who wants to speak is allowed 3 minutes. We have a time clock on my left on the wall over here. The clock will count down your 3 minutes, so if you want to look up, you can see that. At the end of the 3 minutes, there'll be an audible signal. It sounds like a telephone ring to tell you that your 3 minutes are up. You aren't required to use 3 minutes if you could say something quicker. And after that, I'll probably ask you to sum up at that point. So, again, if anybody wants to speak, please make sure I have your blue card. If somebody's making them, and we'll take it if someone's writing them in the back. Let's start with Donald Montague. Please step to one of the microphones and state your municipality that you live in, and please speak.
I'm Don Montague.
Sorry, I mispronounced it.
Not at all. Everybody does. Okay. I wish I were better prepared for this because I have a whole jumble of emotions. But what I wanted to say was I'm obviously concerned about climate and change and all that. But what I'm really concerned about tonight is the community of West Hill. And my wife and I moved there some 23, 4 years ago because it was semi-rural and it was, you know, low density. Now, I have lived in high density. I've lived in Manhattan, and when I was there, I expected it to be, you know, I didn't expect to walk out and see cows grazing in front of the building. Right now, however, let me just say one other thing. I'm reasonably well informed about this situation in Afghanistan and other places, and usually I like to think that I don't have to read the papers every day to find out if anything's going to happen, you know, that I really disapprove of or don't like or will make me uncomfortable across the street. But this is what's happened. And what's so disturbing is that it just seems that the whole process on this big property thing has been gone about in the most bizarrely odd way to just, you know, if I were coming up with a plan to sort of antagonize the residents, you know, I would, have some group come in and do decide that that property was going to be developed. I would not do an environmental statement. I would not contact the residents. Yes, I'm told that there was some possibility to come in earlier, but by the time I came in, and became aware of this, they already had some sort of PR statement that made it look as if this was God's gift to West Hill. But it's not. It's really a threat to our community. And I don't like being cast as, you know, some sort of opponent to low-income housing. Quite the reverse. I'm a knee-jerk liberal from New York State. I mean, but I like to be consulted. If you're going to really change the community I live in, I want to know about that. I want to be part of it. And I think that's our due. And now they're talking about redoing the whole thing. Yes, they should redo the whole thing. They should start from the beginning again, go about it possibly in a much better appropriately less rude and understanding and with some reciprocity from the locals. And anyway, I think I've voiced my displeasure about the process so far, but, you know, it's not too late. We're, very congenial folk up there in West Hill, at least the ones I've met, not all of them, but most of them. And, I think we should reevaluate this whole thing. And again, if development is to take place, let us do it together and with goodwill and with understanding of what's required to make, you know, everybody as happy as can be. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Montague. Robert DePaola.
Good afternoon. Bob DePaola. I represent DPI Consultants. We have submitted a proposal for the old library building. And in response to the request for expressions of interest, it asked us to come up with, it asked all the proposers to come up with a creative proposal. I think we did that. creative in that we are proposing three rather innovative ideas for Ithaca, one being condominiums. It's the only one, a condo development versus apartments. Top-down construction, which is very revolutionary in the construction industry, and automated parking for the cars. Also, the design was rather innovative. So a lot of times innovation breeds fear, and I've heard a lot of comments that there's a lot of concern about any one of those three or four items I just mentioned. So we're going to talk a little bit about this, but I want to start with the condominium market. The City of Ithaca, the Downtown Business Group, commissioned this study from the Dantner Corporation, a national corporation, 300-something pages, to identify where the shortages in housing are downtown Ithaca. There was a severe shortage of for-sale housing units in Ithaca. There still is. If you talk to some of the realtors, there's almost nothing for sale around here. So the condo market in 2011, when the study was done, could have supported 108 condominium units. With the change in the economy and condos really coming back into vogue, financing available, they're now saying we can support 142 units, condominium units, at multiple price points per year. So there's a identified shortage. My project would put 85 units in place. So the resurgence of condos, New York State is vetting the condo process extremely rigorously. Banks are financing condos based on New York State doing their vetting of these. So that's a great thing. I don't want to run out of time. I also want to mention that since we responded to the request for expression of interest, we have met with the Lifelong people. We have a memo of understanding signed and in place. We've started some discussions about what could happen, what complementary and mutually beneficial results we could come up with. And, first blush looks doubling their program space, adding new administrative space, taking the parking that they have now, which is about 45 cars, and putting it under a new building, and putting a new building up behind on that property that would support another 30 housing units. So there are some wonderful opportunities with Lifelong, and we really look forward to embracing those. Again, I just don't want the concerns of some of these innovative technologies to be frightening. They're being used around the states, around the world. We have about 7 buildings under construction around the world using these technologies. They're innovative, and I think if you don't innovate, you die. So I wanted to state that. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Stumpner.
Good evening. I'm Bob Stutner, speaking on behalf of DPI development team about construction-related aspects of our response to your RFEI for development of the redevelopment of the old library. I have 49 years of construction experience, including 34 years leading projects at Cornell with a total value in excess of $1 billion. Our proposed innovative slip form methodology for constructing the structure and enclosure of our project is well proven on several completed civil engineering projects, a building in New York City and 6 in California. A 700,000 square foot lab building in Bangalore is under construction, and a residential tower and a hospital bed tower are currently in pre-construction. National construction managers are embracing this methodology as a competitive edge for two principal reasons: safety and construction impacts. Workers are constructing the most risky components at ground level and greatly reducing the risk of serious injury due to falls. Building the exterior components off-site and erecting them at ground level results in greatly improved safety and ergonomic efficiency. Once erected, each floor can be climate controlled for more efficient interior development. This also greatly reduces construction duration and disturbance to the neighborhood with less noise, construction traffic, and pollution from heavy equipment. The use of building information modeling in the design and construction process reduces errors, waste generation, and removal. DPI will pre-select competent regional and national firms to compete for the project. Post-construction, our design eliminates visual and stormwater pollution by putting parking below the building. Two separate buildings versus one monolithic mass will allow for increased daylighting, air, and viewscapes and the property through the property and allows a park-like courtyard, green roofscapes, and terraces. There would be greater transparency than currently afforded by the existing library building or other proposals. In my opinion, the county has had a great RFEI response from a diverse mix of proposals, including rental, for sale, incomes and reuse, and local and regional developers. I recommend that you advance all of them because all were responsive, credible, and involved considerable resources. Going forward, I believe there is a need for a clear, transparent selection process. Fair, objective evaluation criteria need to be developed for selecting a developer with an emphasis on measurable and objective benefits for the county and community, because the city will control all aspects of the development approvals. Thank you.
Thank you. Gregory May. And then after him, we have Linda Grace Kobus.
Good evening. Is this on?
Yes.
Good evening, and thank you for indulging me for just a couple of moments. I am Greg May. I am chair of Better Housing for Tompkins County, and I'm here with several board members to speak in support of the development of the Biggs property. It's what's commonly called the Biggs property. My day job is to run residential mortgage lending for a very large lender in town here, and over the last several years, one of the things that has become very evident is there is a significant shortage of affordable, safe, affordable housing in Tompkins County. This particular development would, in fact, address some of those needs. Better Housing for Tompkins County is committed to people living in dignity and safe, affordable, and sustainable housing, and we are one of the only organizations locally that focuses on outside the city or rural type housing of this nature. We run a significant number of programs for first-time home buyers, for home repair, and we also manage 121 affordable housing rental units in Tompkins County. There seems to be significant misconception about the project. The RFP was posted. It was a public RFP. My understanding was that Better Housing and NRP were the only ones that responded to that. We are a local organization. Better Housing will be the manager of this project and the owner at the end. So it is a local presence. We have significant green space allocated to this development. There is certainly a commitment on both NRP's part and Better Housing's part to be willing and open for dialogue and discussion with meaningful outcomes to help affordable housing, safe, secure, affordable housing in Tompkins County. And I would encourage and ask the legislature to certainly consider favorably and welcome any comments from concerned citizens. Let's start the dialogue. That's what it's about. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Linda Grace Kobus and then George Kobus.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I was here, as were many of my neighbors, at yesterday's meeting when the legislative committees voted to rescind the sales contract for the Biggs property with NRP, and I don't know if that's still on the agenda because it's not on the printed agenda, but we urge you to rescind that contract because we feel that the process was flawed. And we're here again tonight to urge you to not pass the other resolution, which endorses the NRP project and moves it forward, because all you are doing is going back to square one. We are against this project. It's too big for our neighborhood. It's too environmentally destructive. And I think the county legislature needs to show some real leadership and real farsightedness in how it addresses the need for housing in the county, and also the need, in lieu of the dramatic climate change, the drastic, rapid climate change that we have to cope with, that you just voted for Solar Tompkins, which is a terrific program. But you can't just separate things and say you can vote for solar and you're doing your job for the environment. The worst failure of your leadership is that you are pitting us against the good people from Better Housing for Tompkins County. We support them. We're not their enemies. But this project is too big, and it's in the wrong place. You will take acres of trees to build these 60 houses in a semi-rural area. You will have to extend infrastructure. You will increase greenhouse gases. You will have to provide support services, and none of the numbers add up. We have never gotten a straight answer for any of this project. We urge you not to vote for the resolution for NRP and to reopen the RFP process, because that's an dated RFP that was put together in about 2011, and the deadline was 2012. It was put together before all of the studies on rapid climate change were released, and it just does not meet the needs. It's too big. It doesn't meet the needs of the neighborhood, and it doesn't really meet the needs of the people who will be living there, who have to deal with being far away from town, having inadequate public transport, no schools or services. You're not doing a service to people to put them in a neighborhood, especially low-income people, where they cannot really live decent, good lives in a very safe, comfortable place. And we've talked to the residents at Overlook, and we know the problems that they're going through, and we urge you to talk to them as well, because there are real problems up there. Frank Rhodes just put out a book, Earth, a tenant's manual, and I urge you all to read it, because this should be our guide. It has to be our guide. What is your legacy going to be? If you look at Three Hills, you see the green spaces rapidly diminishing. We are in the process of destroying the Cayuga Lake watershed that nourishes all of us, and that is the precious jewel of the Finger Lakes. If you really care about the environment, you will not support this big project, which is outdated and incomplete, and will not meet the needs of the people. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to say the second resolution we expect will be added to the agenda tonight. George Kobus. Then Joan Brumberg.
Hello. I'm actually speaking for Dr. Ira Wasserman, a neighbor. He asked me to read this for him. I am addressing you in advance of the legislators' vote tonight to express my concern that the Biggs Property RFP, which was devised in 2012, is outdated. In particular, I believe that it undervalues the property significantly. I base this on assessments of land values in my neighborhood. I have gathered the data from the Tompkins County Assessment website, which is given in various tables and numbers. A PDF is attached, which I will provide if anybody wants it. Number one, acreage along Orchard Hill Road, where Wasserman lives, is assessed at an average of $26,000 per acre. My property is about a quarter mile from the Biggs property. Acreage along Indian Creek, Du Bois down to Dates Drive, is assessed at an average of about $26,000 an acre. 402 Harris B. Drive, the home of, that the county sold about a year ago, has 0.92 acres assessed at $25,000, or about $27,000 an acre, if prorated. This property would be adjacent to the proposed development. These figures would value Biggs' property at more like $650,000, not $500,000. I realize Biggs is undeveloped, but undeveloped lots along Orchard Hill are assessed at only a little bit below the average per acre price for the entire road. And the October 2013 resolution authorized credits to NRP for various unspecified improvements so that the effective price of the land set for NRP or any other developer is lower than $19,600 per acre. Another consideration that has not been given sufficient attention is that a 60-unit development would more than double the population of the neighborhood. I've noticed that according to the 2012 RFP, the Biggs property is not zoned for development this large, so a variance is presumably needed to proceed. Common sense says that there is an increase in population of this magnitude will have great impact. In summary, I believe that it would be prudent to reevaluate the original RFP from 2012 before further consideration of moving forward with this development. The price attached to land is too low, and the planned development too big. And I'm reading this for Dr. Ira Wasserman of 2 Orchard Hill Road. Thank you.
Thank you. Joan Brumberg.
May I defer to Joel Sashinsky, who has signed up because of time constraints in his work?
Do I have a blue card for him?
Yes.
Certainly.
Yes, you do.
My name is Joel Savishinsky. My wife Susan and I live on East Hill here in the city of Ithaca. I have a brief statement that I'd like to read, and I do have copies of the statement for the members of the board as well. In the last few months, a number of groups and constituencies have come forward with their thoughts on the best way to use the old library site. People have expressed interest in seeing this location's development meet the needs of nearby neighborhoods, city and county finances, the local environment, individuals of moderate means, older citizens, and the mental health, arts, and business communities. These are all worthwhile concerns, but I'm sure the county board realizes that you can't do it all. You certainly can't do it all on just one site. The difficult task before you is to make the decision about which of these needs gets priority for this critical location and which ones can be met in a way that is compatible with the character and the future of downtown Ithaca. The DPI proposal to construct a development emphasizing affordable condominiums for older middle-class people would fulfill a set of needs that the current housing stock does not address. It incorporates a green space. It keeps parking totally out of sight. It utilizes proven methods of construction. It would have units priced in a range fully in line with what the homes in adjoining and nearby neighborhoods cost. It would bring downtown a set of people with both quiet lifestyles and a demonstrated spirit of civic engagement. And it would support the imperative goal of making Ithaca and Tompkins County an aging-friendly community. No other proposal before you would provide such a creative mix of benefits. If politics is the art of the possible, then the DPI project would make more things possible for downtown than any of the other choices you have been given. Please give it the consideration it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Stephen or Stephen Schumann? Stephen. After that, it's Pat Dutt.
Stephen Schumann, Town of Ithaca, talking about the Biggs property. First, I want to talk about public input. The community, especially the neighbors on West Hill, have made it abundantly clear over the last past months that they do not want this project in its current form. Now, if it's true that NRP cares about community input, I don't know why they're still pursuing this project. As for the legislature, we as a community feel that the input we are giving is not being heard and completely ignored. Yesterday, for the joint committee meeting, we had about a dozen people speak out against this project, all with very sound arguments. The only proponents speaking were those who would be part of the projects, like NRP and Better Housing. A few minutes later, the committees voted as if we weren't even there. Everybody can agree on the need for affordable housing, but it does still matter where you put it. You are putting low-income families in a place where they need to rely on a car, which not everyone will have, or the bus, and we all know bus service is and will remain insufficient on West Hill. There is not a single store out there. Schools are miles away. Talk to the residents in Overlook. We actually have. And EcoVillage co-founder Liz Walker said about EcoVillage under Lessons Learned, I quote, "By living on a steep hill a couple of miles outside of the city, the site doesn't allow easy walking or biking access to shops, schools, or other amenities. Public transportation is not frequent enough to be convenient," end quote. So, no lessons learned? Only a certain percentage of the units in this development would be actually considered affordable. If you look at the numbers for the percentages of units in relation to income levels, you'll see that the project would just fulfill the minimum required to receive the low-income tax credit. Why not make it 100% affordable housing? Because this is not about providing affordable housing. It's all about providing as many tax credits as possible to the developers. NRP is not a charity organization. They want to maximize their profit while the taxpayers are footing the bill. Also, many of the residents will supposedly be employed at the nearby hospital. In an email, John Spence of Better Housing says about a visit with John Rudd, president and CEO of Cayuga Medical Center. I quote, "John Rudd dismissed the idea of workforce housing. It was not one of his priorities. He said most of his staff is well paid and finding local housing," end quote. And just to clear up some myths about this project, it's supposed to be a climate showcase. How can cutting down trees and adding to our carbon footprint due to increased traffic be climate friendly? It's supposed to be a walkable community. You obviously need a car for everything up there. There is nowhere to walk to. Our neighborhood group has already raised and spent well over $10,000 in our fight against this project. We have gathered a few hundred signatures in a short period of time. We will not go away. We will continue to fight this project on all levels until it's stopped. And when the day comes and they try to cut down our trees, we will still be there along with all the public and media you can imagine. This project does not make any practical, financial, or ecological sense whatsoever, so I urge you to rethink it and start engaging with the community. And I have a list of petitions for the legislature.
Certainly, you can hand them up. Pat Dutt?
Well, I live in the town of Ithaca, and I'm also speaking on the Biggs property. As a taxpayer in the town of Ithaca and Tompkins County, I oppose the sale of the Biggs property to NRP. All Tompkins County taxpayers should be watching this sale. The Biggs property is being sold to NRP, an out-of-state corporation whose sole goal is not the good of the community, but to make money, for a little more than $13,000 an acre. There was never an unbiased assessment performed on this property. However, a recently assessed property nearby was assessed at $29,000 an acre, more than double what Tompkins County is selling the Biggs property to NPR for. I understand Tompkins County needs the $500,000, really more like $3,400,000 after all the tax breaks that NRP is getting for the new Tompkins County Mental Health Building. So what this does is fix a short-term problem, but it exacerbates a long-term problem. I am not against development. I understand we need to have some development. I'm against development that does not involve the local community in the process and that results in the destruction of local neighborhoods and the degradation of local communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Virginia Marquis. And after that, Martha Armstrong.
I'd just like to quickly thank Nate Shinagawa for listening to us last night. I really appreciate your time. I'm Virginia Marquis, and I live on Du Bois Road. I've lived there for 21 years, raised my family there. And I just want to say how disheartening it is to come to meeting after meeting and speak and have your words completely ignored. Last night, we were told by someone from Seneca County representing Better Housing that there's a huge need for affordable housing. This is an interesting, although entirely unsubstantiated, argument. We own an apartment as part of our house a few yards from the forest. It's lovely, with a private yard and very reasonable and affordable rent. Our experience has been that when it's for rent, sometimes it takes us months to rent it out, and we never get that many calls about it because it's out of town. That's the main complaint we hear. Do you have personal experience in renting on West Hill? We do. As landlords, we have heard over and over people want to live in or near the city. When we spoke to the manager at Overlook, we were told that they often have a number of vacant units and that the owner was going to build another neighborhood, but they felt it would not be occupied. It's not being built, and they have vacancies. The affordable housing argument sounds very altruistic, and I'm sure everybody means well, but the effect on our neighborhood sadly comes across as similar to the fracking fight. I watched the live court of appeals trial with Dryden versus the gas company, and the argument against Dryden was very strong. They need the need to take over land for the good of the masses, in this case, gas production, usurps the rights of individuals to preserve their land and water and neighborhoods. I felt as I watched it that Dryden would surely lose, but surprisingly, the judge ruled that the town of Dryden had a right to ban heavy industry in their town and had the right to preserve their water and air and decide what they want in the place they call home. Do we not have the same rights? It's neat that Chris Durst said NRP will ultimately be the owner, but does that mean this build would be done out of the goodness of their heart? They'll surely reap a huge profit, and for whose benefit? No one mentioned the woods last night in discussion, other than all that spoke on behalf, those who actually have the most to lose. All we heard was so-called affordable housing and money, that location does not matter, only that it be built. There's no justification for destroying a natural environment to build apartments. Build affordable housing. Just do it in the right place by services, transportation, and where you're not destroying our ecosystem. And contrary to what you might hear tonight, I and many others have personally bushwhacked through the woods. All 25 acres. It is 100% wooded, and everyone should be aware that anything said otherwise is just untrue. We're not letting this fight go on. Someone has to speak up for the land and those creatures who live on it. We'll only go down to kicking and screaming. If we have to, we'll be there. If you decide you're going to start chainsawing down trees, the community is mobilized and ready to fight you on every level possible. It is that important to us. We're not giving up, but ask yourselves, wouldn't it be better, rather than fight us, the people who live on West Hill, to work with us to find a solution? And we welcome anyone meeting with us. We are always open to it.
Thank you, Ms. Marquis. Martha Armstrong, and then Daniel Yoakum.
Hi, I'm Martha Armstrong. I live in the town of Ithaca. I lived on West Hill for 13 years, and I have lived on East Hill for about 8 years. And I'm here speaking about the Biggs property. I'm speaking from my comments will come from several different perspectives. First of all, as a staff member of Tompkins County Area Development, I want to mention that the Tompkins County Economic Development Strategy that we have right now identifies three major countywide economic development goals, things that we felt really had to happen across the entire county. And one of those three major goals is to increase and diversify housing supply, and that's all housing supply, high-end, low-end, middle-end. We need to diversify. We need to have more. And we need to do it across the county, particularly for affordable housing. I was seeing about 10 years ago that affordable housing projects would try to come into an area and would be kind of pushed out by either neighbors who are uncomfortable with it for whatever reasons or zoning reasons. And it was being very hard to have every community step up and say, we're going to provide affordable housing. So that's one of the reasons that it is in the strategy. I also want to mention that the Cayuga Medical Center is the fourth largest employer in the county with 1,300 employees. There's also additional employment in the medical offices, and the Racker Center nearby also has hundreds of employees and is in the top 15 employers in the county. Second perspective I want to bring is as a member of the county's Planning Advisory Board. I've been on the board for a number of years. I've been a chair for the past two, I think. And so I've followed the county's creation of three plans. The first one was to look at critical natural areas, the second one protecting agricultural lands, and the third one, which I've been more directly involved with, was really looking at what are the right focus areas for us to focus development in. Those three plans have been prepared very methodically. They had a lot of public input and went around to the different municipalities, and one of the areas identified in that as a development focus area is the Cayuga Medical Center area. So it is an area that has had a process and thinking over time. The third perspective I'd like to bring is as an architect. When I first moved to the area 25 years ago, my very first job was actually working as a project architect for Better Housing's Juniper Manor 2 up in Trumansburg. And I just want to say that Better Housing is an excellent developer. They work with other developers when they do a project. They don't do it by themselves. This is what they've always done. It's quite common. And that they are a good manager, excellent manager of their properties. And I want to bring in a fourth perspective very quickly. I have a friend who was in town a week ago, stayed with us. She's a single mom. She lives in a more rural area of the state. She's trying to move to the Ithaca area to find full-time employment, support her daughter and herself away from her parents' family. And not away from her parents, but, you know, independently. And she looked here for 3 days solid and could not find an appropriate housing for her. It's something she could afford. And so I really feel we need to have more housing. And I hope we will work together to carry this project forward. What I've seen of it looks like a good project to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Daniel Yoakum, and then Sherry Corthus.
Hello, I'm Dan Yoakum. Is this on? I'm Dan Yoakum, and I live in the town of Ithaca. I've lived there for 21 years. And I'm also one of the petitioners against the county. After hearing people speak last night, I've gotten the sense that the project has taken on so much importance for housing advocates, it almost seems not based in reality. If, among other things, zoning isn't factored in and the EIS makes a big deal about building on or near the federal wetlands, the size of the project could easily shrink from 58 to as low as 35 units. So does this mean that so much fuss, so many hopes and dreams are based on as little as 28 moderate income rental units? I have to ask, is it worth it to thoroughly anger a whole community for this? In the bigger picture, and I believe we're all asleep at the wheel if we don't view our problems holistically and not piecemeal, the project becomes a very small band-aid which does almost nothing to fix the stated concern of adequate affordable housing in the county. I'm fairly skeptical also about the idea that there's little or no property suitable for development in or closer to the city. This was a line we were given last fall when the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association was first formed. And one of our members immediately brought up both the old library and the neighborhood pride site. And sure enough, those two properties and many more, Chain Works, Breckenridge, et cetera, are now in various stages of development. I want to lead you on a little story here. West Hill residents have been told for years that we need to share the pain of expansion. Because West Hill is perceived as being closer to the city, it's always been thought of as especially fair game. But if you disregard environmental concerns, such as easy access to public transportation, idling vehicles trying to enter the city, and destruction of woodlands, etc., and this certainly seems to be the case here, then after West Hill takes its latest hit in the spirit of fairness and limited denialist thinking, other towns should be required to step forward. For example, in Danby, there's certainly open land that somebody with a little zoning tweak would love to sell to a developer for the purpose of building units close to IC. Or how about farmers in Dryden who feel they got a raw deal on their leased land, being allowed to sell it for development so that nearby Cornell employees could have housing? I hope these suggestions make people in this room cringe as much as they make me cringe, but this is a logical next step for the path we're on and the thinking path that we've been sort of indulging in here. Lately, on a lighter note here, lately people have begun asking us for alternatives to the NRP project, what we'd like to see go on the Biggs property. As you can imagine, we have plenty of ideas ranging from a mechanism to keep the woods untouched to a limited number of moderate income for purchase starter homes. And yes, the latter is also only a Band-Aid fix, but it would at least be in keeping with the character of the neighborhood and could be structured to truly minimize the footprint and not run afoul of zoning issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Sherry Corthus. Then Susan Ottenwellen.
Hi, I'm Sherry Corthus, and I'm speaking. First of all, I'd like to say I really agree with all these people in this not building this big development, because if, again, with climate change, we cannot be tearing down any trees. We should not be, anything should be, I mean, we really need net zero, maybe a net zero kind of energy efficient home, something like that. I don't know. I don't know enough about the issue, but I do know that the environment does not need any more damage. But I wanted to speak tonight on the say thank you to the people that voted no on the jail expansion and ask other people to rethink, because I wasn't here the night you guys voted to bond it, that when you say the Pledge of Allegiance and you say with liberty and justice for all, our current jail system is not one that's a justice for all. We have a two-tier justice system, one for those who have and one for those who have not. And that's documented every day on TV, and the militarization is documented. And a lot of people, from what I hear, a lot of people that are being arrested for, you know, different things, but heroin use is a big one. And so those kind of, and alcohol or whatever, but anytime, those are like rehab issues. And I think most of the crimes, whether they fall under property crime or whatever, they're always associated somehow with drugs or alcohol. So I think rehab, and so like this Solar Tompkins is such a great idea. Why? The money that you have for HHS and the jail expansion totals $2.67 million. That's a lot of money that we could put into making this whole county a sustainable future, because climate change is coming. It's coming a lot faster than they said. And Cornell and Harvard have the 2030, that study that we can be 100% renewable energy. And I really think that's important. Let's see what else I wanted to say. My son, I did want to say, just for an example of, he was coming home from work while I was out of town one night from Uncle Joe's, and he was turning left on our street, which is closed, SD in Albany, and he didn't use this left turn signal because it's closed, and our house is right there on the corner, and it's right in the driveway. But that's also shut down because they're doing construction. And as he turned left, a policeman at GX stopped light, turned his lights on, and James continued to go and turned into the parking lot where he parks. And by the time he stopped, the cop had stopped, and he went to get out of his car, and he yelled, "Don't get out of your car," and screamed at him. And within a minute or two more cop cars were there. And this is for a left turn signal. And so he was only 21. He stayed in his car. And anyway, so that's part of my point, is that why were three police officers there for my son, who was coming home from work and just didn't use his left turn signal twice. And I will. I'm going to go take care of that at that court they have. But I thought I'd bring that up because I know it was 12:30 at night. But, again, three. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Susan Mattenwillen. And then Nancy Emerson.
I'm Susan Ottmuller. I'm the executive director of Better Housing. I'm a resident of Seneca County. I want to speak to three issues. First, I want to correct, though, a misperception. The development that on the Biggs property is 100% affordable. It will range from rents of $379 for a one-bedroom for a family at $17,400 to $1,200 a month for a four-bedroom for a family at $47,000. First of all, I'd like to just clarify what the taxes, what we project the taxes to be on this property. The taxes are based on the rental income. The assessment is based on the rental income. Based on that income, we project that the property will pay over $78,000 a year in years 1 to 5, $91,000 a year in years 6 to 10, and $106,000 a year in years 11 to 15. Secondly, there has been some confusion about the home ownership provision. These units will convert to home ownership in year 15. There is no discretion about that the units have to be rental for a 15-year period. That's established by the tax credit law, regulated by the Internal Revenue Service. Part of Better Housing, Tompkins County's mission, is affordable home ownership. So we'll be working with the residents in the development in about year 13 to help prepare them to purchase their units. Secondly, there's been a lot of discussion about out-of-area developers. When the county issued the RFP for this site, Better Housing approached NRP out of Ohio to partner with us. Better Housing does not have the $50,000 or $100,000 that it takes for the upfront pre-development cost to get a project ready to submit for tax credit. And frequently you have to submit more than 1 year. I have partnered with Better Housing on two developments up in the Glens Falls areas and have been very pleased with their partnership with a nonprofit. That is everything. I really appreciated the first speaker who talked about approaching this with a sense of goodwill. Better Housing very much wants that also. And as our board president said, we really are interested in hearing what people have to say to make this a better proposal for the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Emerson?
I'm still short. Okay. I'm Nancy Emerson, and I live on West Hill, and I thank you for the opportunity of addressing you this sunny afternoon, finally. I've worked on West Hill since 1979, and I've lived there since 1982. I started at what was then the Special Children's Center in the Biggs Building in 1979. I remember walking in for my interview, so I know the area very well. And I've lived a quiet life here, and only once before went before government, and that was when I needed a variance for my solar panels. At that time, town code had not yet caught up with the technology. Complacency is a relaxing life. Until something comes along that is so important, one must arise and advocate for the health of our land, our air, our water, our community, and for me, above all, the health of our children and our future children. I'm speaking to ask you, for the sake of the health of our environment and for the health of individuals and families, not to support placing your environmental showcase housing in the Indian Creek Woods. I do not believe it would be prudent for you to go forward, and I ask you to please not rush any process. I will list what I think are the primary issues. The price is under market value. It cannot be a competitive price, as there was only one bid. And I've heard people interpret that as, great, you got a bid, and I hear as, you only got one, and that's because everybody knows it's not a good idea, and it's not a good plan. The finances are dependent on sucking more money out of our public resources for tax credits and for infrastructure. The profits will go out of state, NRP is not a charitable organization. They are a for-profit organization, as they should be. They run a business. I am concerned about the potential for the quality of life in this location. It is very, very far from any sidewalk. It is very, very far from any elementary school. It is 13 miles and 20 minutes. It eliminates completely any possibility for those children and family to participate in enrichment. And without enrichment, they have no quality of their elementary school years. There's very little bus service, and you have to stand in the ditch on a state highway to catch it, with cars splashing mud, rain, and sleet at 55 miles an hour, and often in the dark with our short winter days. I live 2.5 miles from my office, which is right in the Octopus. Very logical for me to take the bus, but that's the conditions under which I would have to take the bus every day to work. I don't think any of you would want to do that on a regular basis. There is no place for recreation. There is no park. There is no playground. There is no field. There is no court. There is not a community space. There's no place to shop and no place to eat. Rentals do not help people establish their own economic stability. Affordability and sustainability are words that are bandied about constantly right now, and they don't mean what they should. When it comes to housing, I believe our county and our town would be better served by affordable owner-occupied housing. Affordable because they're small, energy efficient, sturdily built, and well located. Only then do we truly support our neighbors to build their financial stability and future. I thank you, and I wish you to please carefully consider your options.
Thank you. Next we have Rick Cowan. Then we have Chris Kale.
My name is Richard Cowan, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of you. I am a 55-year resident of Ithaca and a 45-year resident of the West Hill community. Additionally, I have been involved in the management of affordable housing in Tompkins County for the past 34 years. I also live right below the Lindeman Creek Apartments located on Route 79. This experience gives me a unique perspective from both the management and development side of the issue, as well as the home ownership side as it pertains to affordable housing. Earlier on, I distributed a project summary and development features handout, as well as description of the projects that we currently own and manage at Better Housing. This is in an effort to clear up and provide some actual facts and information to some of the misunderstandings that have been articulated to this board and members of this community. One of the things that frustrates me most is the issue of ownership. Those opposed to the project continue to incorrectly state that this project will be owned by an out-of-state corporate entity with little sensitivity to the Ithaca concerns. The fact is that Better Housing will be the managing general partner and majority owner of this project. We are a non-for-profit agency located in Tompkins County with the sole purpose of providing for and assisting residents in finding quality, affordable housing for the past 31 years. NRP has agreed to be a development partner and general contractor in the development of this project. They are a nationally recognized developer that has received numerous awards for outstanding quality and design. They look to partner with quality local organizations that are actively involved in the community and stay committed and involved in the project after construction. They are not looking to stay in once the project's completed. They are large, well-funded, and committed to the success of each one of their projects. I have personally been to several of the projects and was not only impressed, but recognized that they do not have anything comparable to this development in the county. Site selection. The fact is that Better Housing responded to an RFP let out by the county for the purpose of development of a 26-acre tract of land owned by the county known as Biggs. The RFP contained many specific requirements central to the county's comprehensive plan, as well as features specific to the county's proposal for this to be an EPA climate showcase. There were several local and regional developers present at the initial meeting, and they received packets indicating requirements of development. It was at this time that we asked NRP to review the proposal and assist us in putting forth a project that meets the stringent requirements. A question was asked how the county could proceed with the sale of the property with only one bid. The fact is that we were the only bidder that submitted an application and met the criteria that was outlined by the county's request. The reason that Better Housing is able to do this is that we are a not-for-profit agency that does not operate under the same business model as private developers. We do not have to maximize profits, nor do we insist on full utilization of the available space. Our only responsibility is to provide quality, affordable housing to the residents in Tompkins County. Rural location. I know I'm running out of time. It has been suggested that it's not appropriate location for affordable housing development that aspires to be a model of energy conservation. The fact that this development is only 2 miles from downtown and meets many of the county's requirements for nodal communities. It is on public transportation routes as well as proximity to major employment centers. It has also been suggested that some logical place for affordable housing should be located in urban areas. And the only thing I have to say about this is that not everybody wants to live in downtown. There are those people that enjoy living in the downtown community and those of us that enjoy living in the outlying urban areas. We should extend those opportunities to everyone. Some people like high-rises. Some people like garden apartments and townhomes. And that's what we're trying to provide, is an opportunity for people to have choices. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Chris Kale, then Sophie Zappala.
Hi, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. I'm going to try to cover some things pretty quickly. 3 minutes isn't much time. Back when we first built our passive solar house on Du Bois Road, about a mile from the Indian Creek Woods, the Biggs property, or the Biggs complex as it was known at that time, was the location of social services, and as well as many of the other county offices. While building our home, I lived where Eco Village currently is, and I lived there previous to building our home, as well as a single parent without a car. It's everything that Liz Walker says about convenience. So is the place I chose to live, but I chose to live there understanding I would need a car to be able to live there. As the Biggs complex continued to age, there also was a change in government. And since quite a number of years ago, there's been a Democratic majority on this body, and that Democratic majority has consistently held that county services do not belong in that location because of its inconvenience, because it's hard to access, because it's particularly difficult for people who may not have private transportation available to them to access it. I am a low-income person. I would qualify for all of the units that Better Housing is going to provide. However, I love the fact that I am still clinging by my fingernails to being able to live in the home my husband and I were able to build and able to heat without fossil fuels for all these years. I think it's really important to recognize how communities work. The tagline on the EPA grant was communities that work. Part of how communities work is that we work with one another, that we support and hire and make life possible for one another. We have a rural community that works, and it was insulting for the county to come in and imply that our community didn't work. We face charges of being racist. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, I don't hear this body talk about the gentrification that's taking place, how people of color and lower-income people are being squeezed out of homes in the desirable downtown area and pushed into much less convenient locations. I'd like to hear more of that. I'd also like to just mention that we do manage a rental property next door to us as an income-producing thing for our family. We, like Virginia, find it difficult to keep the units rented. I brought my mother-in-law a year ago this month, here from Colorado. She's living in Clarebridge. Was very easy to get her in. Sterling House next door has a number of empty units, has trouble filling them. It may not be where people want to live.
Thank you. Sophie Zappala, then Megan Foraker.
My name is Sophie Zappala, and I'm a resident of West Hill. Regarding the two votes yesterday on the agenda and two votes for tonight's agenda, the two solutions on the agenda today are for the benefit of NRP, and are meant to, one, remove any association between the Biggs property project and the lawsuit to improve NRP's chances of getting the tax credit funding in the future, And two, accelerate the review and approval process at the town level so that NRP can make this year application deadlines. That's really why we are here. This is not about West Hill. This is not about community. It appears you have not heard us. The lack of seeker is only one of the objections we have been voicing since last summer. You proceed as if meeting procedural steps is good enough. It is not. The contract to sell BIC's property to NRP expired in June. The county and the legislature can make a truly fresh start now. But that's what we are doing tonight. It's not a fresh start. We must take the opportunity to re-examine the project itself. We do not have to be confined by a single, ill-conceived RFP. There were never any alternatives. The community was never involved. The community was never given options. That's what we have, one bad RFP, and that's why we are here today. In its current form, the NRP project, is indefensible. It would destroy the acres of wooded land in the environmentally sensitive area, provide expensive housing beyond the means of the residents. The path to ownership is just a PR. We know that. Dispose of the county land way below the market value. That's really a shame, and we will pursue that with actually the county to investigate how the pricing was done. Isolate the residents from the services and employment. Further undermine you in the eyes of the county residents. You are responsible to make the process as transparent and legitimate, and so far you have failed terribly. Build even stronger opposition from West Hill community for this and other similar projects. Disintegrate the current structure of local municipalities. If you keep ignoring us, we will have no choice but to take away from local governments the ability to make the development decisions for our hill. We will create one or more villages to handle zoning and development decisions. It's up to you where we go from here. Nothing, absolutely nothing, the supporters of affordable housing say today will change the fact that the choice of the location disqualifies this project, disqualifies. Now is the time to step back and consider alternatives. We demand the county finds an alternative location for NRP project with a small footprint and close to services. I urge you to allow West Hill community to come up with alternatives to the county BIC's property. And only then, when you have choices in front of you, vote to move the best project for Seeker to town. Not any sooner. Thank you.
Thank you. Megan Foraker, then Brent Katzman.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Megan Foraker. I live at 107 Indian Creek Road, directly across from the property in question, the BIC's property. I can attest firsthand to the environmental issues that my friends in the Ithaca Neighborhood Association have brought to your attention numerous times. Coyotes, foxes, all kinds of predatory birds, turkeys, you name it. There's a lot at stake in terms of the animal life that exists there. And to destroy those woods is going to displace a significant amount of wildlife. I watch it every day. I am home a lot. I see what crosses the road, what goes in and out of those woods. And to tear half of it down is a big mistake. I also have personally experienced the drainage issues that occur on Indian Creek Road as part of some of these major storms we've been seeing more and more over the last few years. Last year in August, there was a huge storm that required some town trucks to come and refill the ditch that had overflown. And I shudder to think what will happen when we remove the trees that are helping to assist in some of that drainage. And I understand there are holding ponds, but I just am not convinced that it's not going to exacerbate that problem. I also have a three-year-old daughter, and I'm concerned about the safety on Indian Creek Road. Should we add 60 housing units to this low-density residential area that I live in? I've been told by the Ithaca Highway Department that the speed limit on my street is 55 miles an hour. It is assumed to be the same speed limit as it is when you get out into the town of Ithaca. I've also been told that the traffic that results in this development will be instructed to use Indian Creek Road to get to 96 and to avoid the hospital entrance. I'm extremely concerned about adding that amount of traffic to my street, which does contain small children, including my own. My other concern is the school system. I've been paying attention to what's going on with the budget, and because my family doesn't meet the certain economic guidelines, my daughter will not be able to partake in the pre-K program, which I totally understand. But I've heard that there's issues at Enfield Elementary School, which is quite far from us, that it is already overcrowded, and there's been no discussion on where the kids that end up in these housing units are going to go to school and what that experience is going to do. I'm concerned about growing the town in an area that is already kind of at capacity with services, and I just think it's not being looked at in a holistic way, and I urge you all to support the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association and not move this project forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Brett Katzman, then Susan Norton.
Good evening, and thank you again for giving me a chance to speak. I want to speak about the old library site. Again, I am a resident of the town of Ithaca, and I am really quite excited about the opportunity in front of us with this site and the fact that I think we collectively as a community really do want to see the city of Ithaca remain and, in fact, continue to develop as an economically vibrant and diverse urban core. I have to, though, bring to light some particular concerns about right now the distribution of housing in the city of Ithaca, both between owner-occupied and renter-occupied housing. The fact that we have got a disproportionately high percentage of housing in the city of Ithaca currently renter-occupied, and the fact that we also have a significant portion of our real property tax-exempt. And so the burden on the remaining owner-occupied residents continues to be quite demanding. As a realtor, I also experienced firsthand the demand for owner-occupied housing in the city. And witnessed this season so far multiple situations of multiple bid, competitive bid opportunities for the small available inventory that has existed in Fall Creek, Bell Sherman, BJM neighborhoods. I understand also, though, that there is great demand for rental housing, as evidenced by the recent study that shows that our rental housing rates or the costs of rent are significantly higher than most other communities and among the highest in the country. And so your task is obviously very difficult to accommodate both of these demands. Having said that, I believe that there's already been an awful lot of emphasis and completion and now proposals for rental housing throughout the city of Ithaca. And a lot of that continues. But there's only one proposal on the table for the old library site that proposes owner-occupied housing. And it's an interesting, diverse type of owner-occupied housing, and that includes condominium development. It may or may not be the right solution for that site in its current form, but I do really encourage you to recognize and balance the benefits that might come from expanding owner-occupied opportunities in the city of Ithaca, including economic diversity, including increasing the property tax base and the distribution of that burden on additional homeowners, and including the likelihood that those who make a significant personal financial investment in their housing will also likely be very engaged in civic activities. So, again, whether or not this proposal with BPI is the right one for that site, I do encourage, as that program gets reviewed, to really understand and consider the totality of the need for growing our owner-occupied housing and balancing that with the need for growing rental. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Susan Norton, then Joan Brumberg. Is Susan Norton here? Yes, okay. No? Then we'll move ahead to Joan Brumberg. Is Joan here?
She's not here.
She left too? Well, I guess that brings us to the end of privilege of the floor for the public. Thanks, everyone, for speaking. and we appreciate hearing from you. We have privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Are there any municipal officials here to speak to us tonight?
They'll just left.
Don't see any. We'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Is any? You don't all have to speak, you know. If you'd like to, it's your opportunity. Who's up? Julie Kiefer.
I just want to call your attention to a page that I had put in your red folders that deals with where railroad crossings in our county are going to be improved. It affects some of your constituents. Just wanted you to know about it.
That's good news.
And I think it would be useful if that information could be put up on a website, our website.
Well, we'll take a look at that. Thanks, Julie. Someone else want to speak? Carol Chalk. Yeah,
well, I just want to inform my colleagues that if the timing works out right, I may excuse myself and run over to the Town of Ithaca Planning Board that is having a hearing about an affordable housing project that abuts my property that I'd like to go speak in favor of. If the timing works out right, I'll come back. Thank you.
That
yes,
would
Carol.
Be on East Hill, right?
That's, yeah, it's on East Hill.
Anyone else? I'd like to speak on privilege of the floor for just a minute and say how proud I am of the efforts of the Tompkins County Health Department. We had an incident in the village of Dryden, where I live, where some young people were observed playing with a dead bat that they'd found in the park, and the neighbor brought that to the attention of officials, and the health department made a real effort to try to locate those children. And while I don't know whether they did actually find them or not, they went public because it turned out when the bat was tested that it was rabid. And we don't know whether anyone was exposed to that. We hope it didn't happen. But I think that our health department went above and beyond to make sure that they could do their best for the safety of the people in my village and for the county as a whole. So I wanted to say that. Anything else? Anybody else? Boy, you're all kind of quiet tonight. But let's move on. I'm going to ask Ed Marks to come forward and take a minute to talk to us about the Biggs Hill project, Biggs Property Project.
Good evening. What I really wanted to focus on tonight was is the housing issue in the county, because I think that's the context for this discussion, or at least a big part of it. And just to remind everyone of some things you may have heard before, some of these you may not have. But more than one in three Tompkins County households has housing affordability problems today, paying a higher percent of their income for housing than is recommended in terms of a financially stable household. Renters pay 50 to 80% more in rent than in neighboring counties. Home buyers pay between 50 and 120% more in median home price as opposed to surrounding counties. The vacancy rates in Tompkins County are extremely low. In the urban area, below 1% for rental, generally. Owner vacancies are not high either. A healthy market, countywide it's about 2%. A healthy rental market has a vacancy rate of about 5% typically. A lot of people in Tompkins County, working in Tompkins County, commute from outside. There's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them certainly is lack of access to housing opportunities. And the number of in-commuters, which contribute to traffic congestion, environmental impacts, increased by 11% from 2000 to 2010. It was already high, It's about a quarter of all workers in the county are commuting from outside the county. Most of the new construction has been, over the last 10, 20 years, has been really aimed at the student market. Although there's been a lot of housing built, a large percent of that is for students, doesn't meet the needs of working households. Analysis as of spring 2014 found Ithaca was the 11th least affordable city in the United States in terms of rent as a share of income. Only one place behind New York City, which was 10th. Tompkins County Housing Strategy called for the addition of about 4,000 units over 10 years, and that 54% of those units need to be affordable to folks making 80% of median income. We haven't met that number, and of the ones that were built, which were not insignificant in numbers, only about a quarter met that affordability standard. So we have a huge gap still, and a growing one in terms of affordable housing needs. The lowest rates of affordability in the county are in the city, the town of Ithaca, and the town of Ulysses. When you look at housing values, you know, compared to what's affordable, those are the communities with the lowest rates of affordability currently. It's about 20% compared to countywide, somewhere between 20 and 40%. Of the housing units built or under construction in recent years, between 2010 and 2013, 65% were targeted toward undergraduate students, and only 9% were affordable. And how did we get here? What's the nature of this problem? Well, for one thing, we are a growing area, which is somewhat unusual in upstate New York. Population growth from 1990 to 2010 was around 8%, but household growth, which really drives the housing market, was over 13%. And housing development didn't keep pace with that. Employment growth also, we're fortunate that employment growth since 2000 has been about 18% in the Ithaca area compared to 4.5% in New York State, 2.5% nationally. So we have a growing economy, and we need the housing to support that growing economy, and we just haven't been able to get enough built. Recent studies have shown these vacancy rates are very low, that there's a high demand for rental units in the Ithaca urbanized area, including the city and the town. This is all well documented. And so we have a huge need. There's many efforts being made to meet that need, but we aren't keeping pace. And so this opportunity and this site, while it has some shortcomings, as does every site that housing is proposed on, I think every project proposed, whether it be in the city, in the town, in one of the other villages, has a lineup of people with concerns about it. And we know that there was a project proposed in the village of Lansing a couple years ago, a site that might have been considered ideal in some ways. Village of Lansing faced an outcry of neighbors, bring up all kinds of concerns. So there is no site that doesn't elicit some concerns, and all of them have some legitimacy. In order to meet our housing needs, we have to do the best we can to balance those concerns of neighbors, of impact, with the overall also major concern that we need the housing for the people and for the economy of this community to succeed. As Martha Armstrong mentioned, housing is one of the top economic development issues for this community. And so it's easy to say why something, a housing project, shouldn't happen at any given location. And many projects have not gone forward because of that. But there are limited places in this community where we have access to public water and sewer, where we have employment nearby, and where we have reasonably regular transit. We know it's not what anybody would like in most communities, but at least availability of some reasonably frequent transit service. Those sites, we've inventoried them countywide. They are extremely limited. Development in the city means redevelopment in most cases, where you have to tear something down to build it. That's very expensive, and it's very hard to make those projects affordable. We've seen one of those projects recently that was affordable out of a half dozen that have been built or proposed. So it is not an easy challenge that we face with housing, and it's one we have to, I think, address where we have an opportunity to, in a place that makes sense and in a way that makes sense. And I think this project offers that opportunity.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Ed? Martha Robertson, then Peter Stein.
Thank you, Ed. You went by all those numbers really fast. I don't know if you have that written up in a form that is sort of...
I have it from a couple different sources, and it can be compiled and circulated to the legislature. We'll have
to do
that.
To the legislature, and I think to the public, or maybe in a guest editorial or something, or and on our website. I think the community deserves a full kind of check-in about where we are since the housing strategy, housing needs assessment was put together about 10 years ago, and the housing strategy that followed. I think that it's important for our efforts to rejuvenate the housing fund, the partnership with the city and Cornell, with the county, and just to remind people throughout the community of what's at stake when when we evaluate the balance among these competing interests. And, you know, we really need to remind people that we really do have a problem. And I looked at the income levels, I'm trying to find where it is. A while back, I was on the home ownership, the program with Better Housing, where we support home ownership for, so there's a mortgage support if people are, to buy into an existing housing market. And people, I'm not finding it now, but people, all right, never mind. I can't find the numbers among these papers, but people of these sort of, so-called affordable housing units, these are folks who, are bank tellers, they're teaching assistants, they're bus drivers, they're, directors of nonprofit agencies in our county. We heard from one agency a while back that was struggling because their own employees qualified for the affordable housing that that they were trying to put up for people with mental health issues. And it's an enormous struggle in this community. Now it comes from, as you said, the benefit of having a growing economy, a vibrant economy, a place where people want to live. We're all lucky that that's true. I think people need to recognize, and I think people would benefit from the perspective that we've got a lot of hardworking people in this community who really struggle. And when you say people who are paying more than they should, in other words, that means instead of paying, say, 30% of somebody's income for housing, which has been the standard according to HUD, people are paying 40, 50, 60% of their income for housing. And that means they end up really, really struggling to pay for other basic needs. So I really appreciate that context and appreciate the information. So I hope we can get a more formal presentation of those data points so that everybody can appreciate it.
Peter Stein.
There was one statistic that you quoted that I remember reading in the newspaper and asking myself, how can that possibly be true? Namely, that Ithaca was, seventh or some small number, most expensive places to live. Because I know that when Cornell searches for faculty members, one of the big advantages that Cornell has is that it costs a whole lot less to live here than it does in many of its competing institutions. And I know I can name you a whole bunch of California cities where I know people, Palo Alto and Santa Barbara and San Francisco, where they're paying tremendous amount of money for rent that I could not even anticipate living in. And I don't exactly understand how that statistic can be right. I know more than six other places in this country which are much more expensive to live than Ithaca. And I wondered if it's skewed by the students that are renting property who probably have zero income and are paying rents. Therefore, the ratio of the rent that they're paying to their income is perhaps high, and it may be that that's the skewing that number. I can't give you an answer, but I certainly have thought about that.
Well, you know, we have some unique circumstances, but they use median income and median rent. And if you look at what's happened to housing prices versus incomes in this community, from 2000 to 2010, the average housing price doubled, 100% increase. The median family income, which is non-students, increased by 60%. So the gap between, there's a 40% gap in terms of housing cost increases versus income increase. And so this is, you know, there are unique factors here, but it's very real that the incomes are not keeping pace with housing costs in this community and haven't been for some time. There are certainly people who can afford it in this community, but there are a whole lot who cannot.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm willing to accept that, but the number seventh high, I forget
11th,
what number you
11th. I mean, it's based on a way of looking at the data. I think any one statistic is not going to tell the whole story, but these combinations of statistics collectively tell a story that a lot of people, and then we know from all the folks that, you know, work with businesses, the folks that are working in human services, that they hear about this on a regular basis from employees and from their clients, that housing is a struggle and a difficult thing to deal with for many, many people in this community.
Ed, could you just repeat what the statistic was? It was 11th highest for income compared to, what was it?
Median rent. Median income compared to median rent, that affordability factor.
So it wasn't the raw data of how expensive it is.
I want to go to Nathan next. Nathan?
That's right.
You pass?
Know if we were going to.
I'd just like to point out that we still have some folks, I think, waiting to hear about our action here, so I'd kind of like to move this up at this point. Anyone else have any questions or comments for Ed Marks, our director of planning, I should say? All right. Then I'm going to skip down to resolutions to be added and withdrawn from the agenda. Are there any?
Yes, I would like to add the resolution repealing resolutions 2013-164 and 2013-165 regarding the sale of real property in the town of Ithaca.
Is there a second? Seconded by Brian. Discussion? All those in favor of adding those?
Wait, can I point of information?
Or no, we're voting.
Well, no, I'm not sure if I can vote or not. So I'm going to need to...
You want to abstain?
Well, I'm going to need to... Excuse myself from voting on the Biggs property, I believe. It's been announced.
I'll permit you to abstain on that.
So can I?
I'll permit you to abstain.
Oh, thank you.
All right. All those in favor, please.
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know why she's being allowed to abstain.
So it's been announced publicly by press release. It was in the paper that Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services and Better Housing are in discussions about what activities they may be able to consolidate. I think they don't know exactly where it's going, but to avoid any appearance of a conflict of interest,
I don't feel like I mean, talked to Jonathan. I can't vote on the things related to the bigs, so I don't know if it's appropriate to vote to add it to the agenda. I'm happy to have it added, but
Carol has family who's involved in administration of.
I didn't hear that they were involved in the bigs property. I mean,
they aren't at the moment, but since they're in discussions about what can or can't, it won't be, will or won't be consolidated as they move forward.
I'm sorry, the ruling of the chair is that she may abstain. Can we move on with the vote? All those in favor of the adding those resolutions to the agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. All right, now let's go to government operations. And Nathan, would you like to move your resolutions?
Yes.
One at a time?
Yeah, the first resolution that I would like to move is resolution repealing resolutions 2013-164 and 2013-165 regarding the sale of real property in the town of Ithaca.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin, McBean Claiborne. Discussion. Nathan?
Yes. So the Government Operations and Budget Committee met in a joint committee yesterday to discuss these two resolutions. And these resolutions were passed by both committees during that time. And so the first resolution that we're looking at is let me take a step back. The reason why we had that joint committee yesterday was because the Government Operations Committee had postponed action, not on this repeal resolution, but on the other resolution, because there were, at the time the results of the, the initial judge's decision had not been disclosed yet. And so that was the end of June. Then subsequently, about 3 weeks later, we ended up having, the judge's initial decision came out a couple days later. And then we had this joint commission. Gosh, I'm sorry, I work in a hospital. and this joint committee then got together 3 weeks after we originally had met. So this resolution repeals previous actions that the legislature has taken regarding the big site. So it means then that essentially we would have to start the process again, from the point there would be no contract with NRP in place. There would not be any application for tax credits. You would need to do a new seeker review, et cetera. And the next resolution actually deals with that first step, which is actually engaging in a seeker review process. The next resolution does not deal with anything with the sale of the property, nor does it have to do with the applying of tax credits. It's all about the first initial step, which is giving this to the authorizing this to go to the town of Ithaca for the seeker review. And I have a lot to say when that point comes, but for now, those are my comments about the repeal.
Any other comments on the resolution to repeal? Dooley Kiefer.
This was discussed yesterday, as you said, at the committees. And I remember asking a question about it at that time. I'm looking at the second whereas, which indicates that we entered into a sales agreement with NRP, which is one company. But in the next whereas, it talks about the companies. And so there's no mention of Better Housing in this resolution, and I think either it needs to be named if it's part of the contract, or when you start talking about companies, plural, the mystery second company should appear somewhere in this resolution.
Yeah.
How was that resolved yesterday?
If I recall correctly, and please someone correct me if I'm wrong, but that NRP was, though this is a project with Better Housing, at the time they had not formed any sort of joint entity, and so therefore it was NRP that was that put forward the application, and their name was on it. So I guess, given that the whereas may want to just reflect the company, though I'll defer to Jonathan on that.
It could either just say company or say something NRP and its associated partner, Better Housing of Tompkins County. Either one would be accurate.
I didn't think in the contract anyone other than NRP was mentioned.
Right. No, with regard to the line that refers to the contract, it would just be NRP. With
right.
regard to the later references to companies, it could either say company or NRP.
Right. And also, I mean, this whereas the companies may apply for moderate income housing tax credits again in October or January, but there is now time for the county to participate in a coordinated seeker. Well, I think that, by that time, because remember, this next resolution is not dealing with the contract. So by that time, there may be an entity where there is Better Housing and NRP joined together. So actually, I think now upon further reflection, that companies is actually appropriate language.
I think that's fine, but I think you need to identify Better Housing and not just refer to it as a vague partner. So in the third whereas, I think that name should be introduced, and then it carries through the next several whereases. There was a vote on this resolution at both committees.
Right.
Was it unanimously approved at both committees?
Yeah. This particular repeal resolution was, not this second resolution. The second resolution was a three, unanimously approved by budget, but only 3-4 for by government operations.
Dooley, do you want to move an amendment, or can we move on?
Well, I had assumed the mover might think it was appropriate, but I'll move an amendment in the third whereas to identify at that time because NRP Properties LLC and its local partner, Better Housing of Tompkins for Tompkins County, had not yet applied. If indeed they both were the ones applying for federal tax credits. If it was just NRP who was applying, then it doesn't apply there either, and it should be singular. I just don't know the details, and I'd like to make this accurate. So I want to move an amendment, but without the information.
Restate, please, what you wanted to say.
I need to know if NRP and Better Housing, both names were on the application for federal tax credits.
I don't know.
Does anyone know the answer to that?
The director's here.
Somebody
the director's
knows.
Here.
Director's is here. Do you know the answer to that? I'm seeing a shrug.
He says he does not know the answer to that.
Right. I'm sorry?
Well.
The answer is yes. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
So,
does that help?
So if both names are appropriate for the third, fourth, and fifth whereases, then in the third whereas, I would like to amend it to say because NRP Properties LLC and its local partner, Better Housing for Tompkins County, had not yet applied. And then the word companies will be correct in the next two.
Is there a second for that proposed amendment?
No, this is friendly to me. Because,
it's friendly?
Yes, it's friendly.
All
it's,
right.
It's the whereas, so yes.
Okay, then we'll allow Dooley to withdraw her motion, and I guess is it friendly to the seconder?
Yes, it is.
All right, then that's been added. Anything else? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the repeal resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed, Dooley Kiefer.
I would like to say the reason I'm opposed is that I believe the court case should run its course.
Thank you, Dooley. Nathan?
And I'd like that in the minutes, please.
Okay. All right. My next resolution is, hold on, I just want to get the revised version here. I'm moving the one that's revised as adopted by the Budget, Capital, and Personnel and the Government Operations Committees. And so it's different than what was in your packet because of language that was added by Dooley. Everybody should have a copy of that. And for the members of the audience, this is the same thing that we had talked about yesterday about how wherever it says sale to also add the word or lease. And then also that under the fifth whereas and the first resolved that it would add that this is this project was conceived for development that would implement the principles developed under the U.S. EPA Climate Showcase Communities Grant Project.
That's in your red folders. Do you want to move that, Nathan?
Yes, I would like to move that version. So in that resolution,
second? Seconded by Dave.
And I didn't actually name the resolution. Should I do that? It's just the authorizing NRP Properties LLC to submit application for project on property located on Harris B. Dates Drive in the town of Ithaca.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. Discussion?
All right.
Julie?
The copy I have doesn't have line numbers. So
oh, okay.
I'll be counting from the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
First page one.
Okay.
The third whereas from the bottom.
Okay.
There's reference, I'll read it. The RFP recognized that expenses for off-site improvements might need to be incurred to support approval of the project. And my question is that referred to approval of the project by the town of Ithaca?
I mean, the RFP recognized that expenses.
Yeah.
Yes, I suppose so. I mean, this is also referring to the original RFP, yeah. Right? So, yes.
So, my suggestion is to put approval of the project to insert by the town of Ithaca, if that's what's meant, for clarity. I have one other question, and then I'll make a motion. I want to ask about the second whereas from the bottom of page one. Whereas the purchase offer is in excess of the appraised value. Is that the 2009 appraised value?
Yes, that would be the 2009 appraised value.
Then I think the number 2009 belongs in there.
That would be friendly to me.
So those are both friendly, Nathan?
Yes.
Right. Yes. Anything else? Nathan, did you want to speak about it?
Yes, no, but Dooley, did you have a motion that you wanted to make?
Well, if they're friendly.
Oh, both of them are. Okay, gotcha. Yes. All right. So with this resolution will – hold on, let me just – I don't have the back side of it here. I just want to reiterate that what this resolution does is it's a way – and I know, you know, the residents would love that are here tonight would like the proposal to start from the very beginning, you know, at the RFP process. That doesn't do this. What this does is it recognizes that – I mean, it accepts this NRP proposal – as the one that was submitted and approved from the RFP process, but then from there does not engage in a new contract with the with NRP or Better Housing, and it doesn't do any application of tax credits either. What this is this is specifically authorizing this to go before the town for the seeker review. And so actually, as part of that, though, Ed, I was actually wondering if you could come up because I do have questions about that. And this is the part where I'm going to, you know, just talk about some of my concerns with the project. You know, given that perspective that I've just laid out, you know, that this is a project that I support the principles of the project and what it's trying to achieve. I have concerns, though, about NRP's proposal that I would like to have addressed. And so the first one is that with this project, you know, the conservation easements that are part of the project, you know, right now we are saying that, you know, more than 50%, I think it's like, you know, 16 out of the 19 acres or something are going to be left open space, and there's also going to be a 150-acre buffer zone around the property except for where the road is. How do we know? What's that? Is it a, I'm not, did I say acres? Oh, sorry. Feet. I meant feet. All right. Thank you. And so it's been a long day. I apologize. How do we know that that's going to actually happen? Because, you know, I've had experience, and I mentioned this yesterday, with developers changing their position on things. So what can we do as a legislature when that time comes? Because I know this is the seeker review part, but when that time comes, how do we ensure that?
Well, the intent would be to, if it came to the point of a sale, to have any sale agreement include a conservation easement on that portion of the property that was to remain undeveloped so that there would be no legal right to develop it in the future.
Okay. All right. Then my next thing is on the price of this property. You know, the residents have concern about the price. The last review of the price was done in 2009. I assume that when we get to that point where we're going to talk about the sale of the property, you know, depending on the results of the secret review, that there would be a detailed explanation on the current, on the price associated with it?
Yeah, we can certainly do that. Again, we believe that price, given current trends in land values, is pretty accurate. The couple of points I would like to make. One, the prices that people have been quoting for assessments sound like they're for like 1 or 2 acre lots. And that's very different than a larger parcel, the way it gets assessed and its value per acre. So those really can't be compared.
I mean, all I'm asking is that when we get to that point, you know, that it's not, I don't think it's enough just to say that it's not comparable or that, you know, it was a 2009 numbers. I mean, I think we have to have, you know, more recent examples that are comparable. And I understand that would take, you know, some greater review from.
We can certainly provide that, but I can tell you right now there's a parcel 65 acres in that area for sale for less than the value that we had on this property.
I mean, and the reason why I ask all these things is that now that we're sort of starting the process new, I think it's a good time for us to push all of these questions. You know, the other thing, too, is about tax abatements. You know, there's one thing that I've heard concerned about is that this project, you know, could they apply for IDA tax credits? I know that Susan talked about how there was going to be, that they're going to be paying taxes. But, I mean, is there any intention to apply for any sort of abatements with this project?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there hasn't been expressed any intent to look for abatements. They've expressed, as was stated earlier, the intention and the estimates of taxes that would be paid.
Okay. And then my final question is about the secret process. You know, so now this is going to be going forward to the town. How can we ensure that the town is going to be, I mean, I don't know if we can ensure anything. I mean, I want to know if there's a way that we can to make sure that the town has an open, transparent process, that they are able to take an input from the residents about their very legitimate environmental concerns with the project. I mean, what can be done?
We'll be in a party to that seeker review at the county, so we have that opportunity to make sure that the issues are addressed, and the county will, you know, this legislature will ultimately make its own determination. And I have great confidence in the town's process. I mean, they're very thorough in their review of projects and the seeker process that they oversee on those projects.
Yeah. So when we get to when that starts, I guess whenever there's information about the seeker review process, any dates that are going to be coming up, you know, any decisions or considerations being made, I think this legislature and the public needs to be informed every step of the way about it.
That can certainly be done and will be.
All right. That concludes my
comments. Okay. Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Mike. Ed, a couple of things. The way I understand this resolution, most applicants, maybe all, where you have to ask for a secret review of something, the applicant has to have site control, right? I mean, there has to be, you don't ask for a secret review on your neighbor's property. You don't know. You don't, NRP doesn't own this piece of land.
Right.
Right. So this resolution kind of enables them to go ahead through this process even though they don't own the land.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Could you remind us, if this project didn't go through, the county has already passed a resolution designating this as sort of excess property, that we don't have a county, specifically county government use for the land. Am I right?
The legislature did pass a resolution finding this was no longer needed for a public purpose, public use.
So we don't, like land bank, we don't just hold on to land. If this thing doesn't happen, what would we do? What would happen to this land?
Well, there's certainly options, but I think it was always the intention, and I would assume it would continue to be the intention, that the county wouldn't retain ownership over the long term, and so would dispose of it, sell it in some manner, shape, or form.
And what would likely happen to it? Who would buy it? What would the use end up being? Can you tell?
It's hard to say. You know, most people that buy land like this buy it and subdivide it, but you never know.
So under current zoning, under current zoning, what would be allowed to happen to this land?
A number of things could be allowed, but you know, it requires 30. If you subdivide lots, it would require 30,000 square foot single family lots if that were to be the way that it was developed. And so you could, depending on how that review goes, we've estimated somewhere between 20 and 20 plus lots or would be developed there, 20, 25 probably.
Single family units.
That's one option.
Okay.
And the town does allow duplexes, so those could be multiplied by two if somebody chose to go that route.
Okay. The IDA housing projects that we've done, just I hadn't heard this question before about the abatements, Nate. Just to be clear, it's not a question, it's a comment, that abatements that Thomas County IDA has offered for housing has only ever been within the city's density area, within the designated area as in the city's density plan. There's also a Lansing kind of density program in the, you know, a certain area in the town of Lansing around Rogues Harbor Inn that has been approved by the IDA, and housing could be, appropriate housing could be granted an abatement in that area, but those are the only two places in the county where the IDA could, by policy at all, could do anything with abatements on a housing project.
I mean, but those are, well, there's the density policy as an accelerated abatement program, but I think theoretically within the powers of the IDA, wouldn't you be able to do abatements for other projects?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's...
Not for housing. There's no policy right now. I mean, theoretically, the IDA could pass anything like that, but at the moment, there's...
And I think that...
The only housing projects that are allowed are within those two geographic areas.
We're going a little bit far afield here. Can we come back to the motion?
Okay, then I would just... the only other thing I would ask is, so where are we with the town of Ithaca? I assume and hope we're not just kind of dumping this on them and then they'll read about it in the paper tomorrow. What's the communication been with the town of Ithaca on how this is going to go?
Well, I think the proposed development team has been discussing over months, you know, with the town when they would begin a process and what that process might look like, when and if it was appropriate. They know that or anticipated at some point this project would be forthcoming. I think, and they've been notified about this approach and are aware that that's possible that they would come this way.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I've got Dan Klein, then Mike Sigler, then Will Burbank, and then can we come around to a vote?
Thanks, Mike.
Peter Stein.
So Dooley had made some suggestions to this that were incorporated into the resolution. I just wanted to check on the accuracy of one of them. The third whereas from the bottom, it now says expenses saying that it's paid for by the town of Ithaca, but that wasn't my understanding originally. And so help me out here. It wasn't the original thing that we are getting more for the site than the assessed value, and then some of that money will be used to build spurs to the Black Diamond Trail and to the bus line, and that the difference will end up at the assessed value?
That was in the agreement, but the agreement is now null and void. So how that occurs, if it occurs, would be totally open to negotiation as the project goes forward. I don't...
Exactly.
Okay, so it's not accurate, though, to say that it's at the expense of the town of Ithaca.
Not at the expense. I think if I heard what Dooley was saying, she was referring to the process under which those might be required.
Yes.
Not that it would be at the expense of.
Well, so could you read that whereas as you changed it?
This is the previous resolution we're talking about.
Let's let Kathy read back.
Thank you.
Kathy?
Whereas the RFP recognized that expenses for off-site improvements might need to be incurred to support approval of the project by the town of Ithaca, including for pedestrian and transit improvements. And the remaining, the rest of the paragraph stays the same.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, then we have Mike Sigler.
I'll be quick. I'm going to vote against this. I've heard a lot of things like where we're talking about, you know, this is kind of like we're starting anew, and I don't know. I'm thinking maybe we should just start anew. I mean, my father always gave me two pieces of advice. One I won't share, but the other one was stay out of court if you can do that. And I don't know. There's just a lot of bad blood here, and I think we don't have to have that much bad blood. And I could be wrong. I mean, maybe there are people in the room that would never be happy with any development there. I don't know. What I do know, just empirically, is that when I moved to Tompkins County, I said, why did they build the hospital there? That's not where I would have built the hospital. But, you know, it's been there for 60 years, and you're not going to move the hospital at this point. But they are building everything hospital-related on the other side. So that says something to me. It says, you know, maybe Route 96 is pretty much tapped out. Maybe we can't put more traffic on that. I don't know. What I do know is I drive up 96, and I feel like I'm Luke Skywalker going down the channel because I got a big wall rock there, and then I got houses on the other side, and I don't know. I just don't know how much more you can put there. So I kind of understand what these people are saying. We put a very large development there, and then a few years go by, and we put another big development, and maybe they're just tapped out for a while, and I don't know. I think maybe they want us to step back and say, okay, maybe this isn't the right development there. What kind of development would you be happy with there? I don't know. Maybe that is something to look at. Maybe it would be better commercial, hospital-related stuff that gets traffic in the afternoon as opposed to the outflow. I don't know. But it does seem to me that maybe we should just start fresh. And
Will Burbank?
That's kind of where I'm coming at this. So that's what I would like us to do, is just start fresh. Thanks.
Will?
Thank you, Mike. Question for Ed. We were talking about the assessments, and there was the question whether truly a number of speakers tonight raised the question whether we're actually getting adequate payment for this property. Am I right that we actually don't have to sell property to the highest bidder, that there can be situations where we have other goals?
Yes, and you might want to defer to the attorney for the details on that, but absolutely. And in this case, we had a pretty long list of things that were required in that RFP. So, you know, we were asking for a lot in terms of doing something different than the norm.
Thank you. And I've lost my question. I'm going to actually jump to Peter, and it'll come back to me. So,
Peter Stein.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really haven't put a lot of time into reading these documents and understanding it. I only have sort of a cursory understanding of what's going on. But in my mind, I'm comparing this situation to the other piece of real estate that we're now engaged in. And when I first heard about that RF, whatever it is, not P, but RFEQ, I thought that was wacko, okay? But I am really impressed at what came out of that. I'm deeply impressed by what came out of that. And it seems to me, I've heard the people, I know a lot of these people that have complained about the site. I've worked with them a little bit before on other issues. And I really don't feel that I can just out of hand discard what they've said and go back to the original proposal and just carry it on again. I think that we are going to make the decision as to what goes into the old library site because it's our land and that's what we're doing. And I'd like to see us do the same thing for the other piece of land. So I'm going to vote against this proposal.
Jim Dennis, and then we're back to Will and Martha.
Thank you, Michael. It's very interesting for me. I was on city council in the 1970s, and it reminds me of those days when the city of Ithaca was struggling in the college town area. And people came to meetings when we were trying to do projects in the, to rehab College Town. If any of you who were there in the 70s knew what it was like or know what it was like. And we were confronted with the property values would go down. East Hill would be an undesirable place to live. As a matter of fact, College Town development took place. Property values increased tenfold in the College Town area. Single-family homes were unreachable by anyone in that time. East Hill became the most desirable place to live in Tompkins County, in the city of Ithaca. And the next thing that happened, Fall Creek, where there were more moderately priced homes, that became the big area to move into, and then West Hill followed. What troubles me about all the residents who have come out here, I understand what the consequences are if you vote for something like this. That clearly is your right. People have threatened me. It's your right. I understand that. But I think what we're doing here by moving this project ahead again is something that I've lived in this county for 35 years, and all I've ever heard about was housing, affordable housing, do those and lack of complete housing in Tompkins County. I think Ed made the point, 15,000 people drive into this county every day for their jobs. Half of them maybe want to live here. The other half choose not to live here for whatever reasons, if they could have that opportunity. A couple things trouble me. Statements are made about the project. Here's the project as it was described to us 2 years ago. It has pocket parks. It has recreation areas. It has play areas. It has gardening. These are all things that have been not mentioned at all, but what has been mentioned is nothing is there for the people that may be there if, in fact, this thing goes ahead. Frankly, there was a point when we were discussing all this that if this thing went back to square one, we turned it down and said we just want to sell our land. A developer would come in there and turn that into some incredible, expensive kinds of housing if we were able to sell it to a developer. And then we'd have more of the same. We'd have high-cost housing. People wouldn't have a place to live. And we would have not satisfied any of the goals that this legislature, way before I came on here, had in mind about housing. And Mike, I want to answer two questions you brought up. When you moved to Tompkins County, you said, why did they build the hospital in the Northeast? When I was a new member of the city council, I said, why would they ever do that? They had the two narrowest roads in town to get to the hospital. The city council at that time, which I was a member of, made an incredible error. They rehabbed the West End Octopus at ground level. They had the opportunity to go over the railroad track, go over the channel, and do other things that would have changed that whole area. They did not do that. The hospital, and it's not about politics, but the legislature was controlled by the other side of the aisle at that time. And it was an unwise decision.
I knew the Green Party.
Democrats might have been able to make that decision too. But and I think they stayed here because they owned the land and they didn't want to acquire land in the Northeast area. But that's a little history lesson. I'm going to support this project.
Okay,
I think it answers the goals that we have set and we have talked about forever in this county. And I think it's a quality adventure that will turn out 5 years from now, 10 years from now, it will be a good project. And, people have to wait to see And I agree with that. The town of Ithaca turns down projects one after the other. And if I were a developer, I would not want to go to the town of Ithaca and try to get something through. I think it's going to be a miracle if this project makes it through all the things over there, even with a full-blown seeker, because they're going to need a bigger room to have the people talking about this project as it moves forward. So I hope we do it, and the town of Ithaca can live and die with whatever they want to do with it. So.
Will, then Martha, let's proceed to a vote. Nathan and Leslin?
Mike, it's what we do. We're supposed to debate.
Well, I understand that, but we're supposed to vote, too. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Right. Thanks for the second whack at the apple. Jim, I laughed when you mentioned the opposition to building an elevated highway. I was out in the audience in those days. I was part of that crowd, and I'm very proud, quite frankly, that our community rose and stopped what would essentially have been an attempt to do a mirror image of what is presently Route 13 on the west side that would have gone elevated over much of west side of Ithaca. And the reason we opposed it at that time was precisely because we did not want to spawn a huge wave of suburban development at the terminus of that highway. The inadequate roads, which are admittedly very inadequate, I live on the west side, I drive or bike or walk every day, and I'm very aware of the traffic. The inadequate roads are, in fact, a deterrent to being there, and it's a traffic calming, and we put up with it. I've lived in urban areas. I know, relative to most other places, a 15-minute commute is something you can live with, whereas people all around the country are dealing with, two, three-hour commutes sometimes. So this is Ithaca. We focus on these things. I also want to say that I've been paying attention to this particular plot of land for a very long time. I was aware of it before I even got on the legislature. I used to be on the town board, and I was aware that when the property was divided, I thought it was intensely important that something good be done with that. And as Ed can tell you, I was a long time in terms of warming to this particular project. My general sense was that we should look to the town, see what they wanted, certainly talk with neighbors, but try to come up with something creative. When I came on to this legislature, however, what I was mostly hearing was the need to sell this property basically to pay off the cost of having moved the health department to Brown Road. The fact that we came up with something, I think, that meets a number of social, economic, and environmental goals is a testament to, I think, a really, really hard effort by our planning department. I know it's perceived differently by neighbors, but it took me a long while, but I eventually came to feel that it was the right thing to do. I will be voting for it, but I want to say that I do that because I believe we are not creating a new neighborhood that's going to be undesirable. It is something that I would feel comfortable living adjacent to myself. And I have to tell you, where I live, I can go out my back door, and the very first complex I come to is West Village. I can walk down the street a little bit. I come to Cedar Creek. I am close to a number. I can walk up the hill. I'm at Linderman. I have many, many complexes relatively in walkable distance from where I live. Yet our neighborhood has maintained its sense of identity, its sense of connectedness, and I guess I want to live in a community where we can welcome all people of all incomes. And we are, I agree with Jim that the chances of this project ultimately succeeding are really unknown. We are sort of starting over in terms of the environmental review, but the outcome is anything but assured. And I guess my call to neighbors is keep talking with us, keep sharing ideas. If this project doesn't come, I think there will be a strong move to try to put it on the market just to get the money out of it. But I hope we could do something better, and I would encourage all of us to keep talking. So, Nathan? Thank you.
Nathan?
Yes. I just wanted to, to say too that, you know, I will be supporting this resolution, and you know, and I've talked about, you know, the reasons why in this on the floor of this legislature before, you know, my support for affordable housing, for finding the type of project that can balance, you know, having some green space and open space while at the same time having some dense development and, that actually has infrastructure there, you know, sewer and water plus public transportation and all that. But even though I support the project, that doesn't mean that I don't want to listen to people, you know. And I think that, you know, with I personally didn't have a lot to do with this resolution, and because I wasn't on the Government Operations Committee, I wasn't on planning. Now I am the Government Operations Committee chair. This will be going forward. I mean, the sale of the property, when it gets to that point, or if it gets to that point, which includes, you know, I would assume, Ed, contract, you know, negotiation when it gets as well in the future, that's all going to go through my committee, which is Government Operations. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I have, as the chair of this committee, you know, we postponed action, waiting to hear what the judge would say. We have then, you know, taken up a lot of, we've had public comments about this. We are going to really push on the seeker review and also making sure that we have a good process and an open process on the budget negotiation. So I just wanted to emphasize to the residents that I haven't been very active on this project, and I know we probably fundamentally disagree on whether or not it should or should not happen, but I can at least work with folks, you know, on figuring out a way to make it a better project. And that is something that I'm fully committed to, and I just wanted that to be clear on moving forward. And I really hope that we find ways to make this a good process moving forward, too.
Leslie Levine Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity. A lot of what has been said already are thoughts that I had. Jonathan, I had a question for you. I've heard the neighbors and Dooley and my colleague in particular talk about wanting to wait until the court decision, whatever the judge's decision will be, before we move forward with this. Would you explain to me what impact, if any, the court decision one way or the other would have on this if we move forward or don't move forward?
Well, I think the whole point is that, in my view, it wouldn't have any effect on it whatsoever.
A little closer to the microphone,
sure.
John.
What I was saying, in my view, and the sort of whole point is it really wouldn't have any effect on it whatsoever. I mean, what is being challenged is a prior resolution and an agreement. That agreement by its own terms is going to expire, really has expired, because they didn't get the low-income housing tax credits.
Right.
So essentially that leaves the county with two choices. One, we could proceed in another way, such as coordinated review, which is what's suggested here, which is time allowing was probably what should have been done in the first place, but time allowing I think we should do, or we can go and renew what we did before, but you can't do nothing because that's going to expire anyway. So a court decision on the validity of something which is going to expire anyway, or it's just expired anyway, really doesn't have a lot of significance because you're going to have to come back and do something anyway. So I just don't really think it matters as a practical matter. I mean, I think as a practical matter, the legislature needs to decide what it wants to do.
So Mike, I have a few more. So our decision, if we were to vote to support this and it moves forward, isn't suggesting that we are trying to get around the court process and do something real quickly before the court decision. We're trying to get underneath the radar quickly.
No, I mean, it'll be a long time. We haven't even answered it. So there would be some time before there would be any court decision. Simply that process would take a long time. And in the meantime, something would need to be done. I mean, one would have to make a decision anyway about how to proceed. And you might as well proceed in the most, you know, assuming that the legislature wants to go forward, which it appears the majority does, how you want to proceed, and it would make sense, in my view, to proceed in the best way, which would be a coordinated review.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Ed, you and the planning team, I certainly do want to extend my thanks to you all for working on this and bringing the information and being as open as you can be with the information for all of us to get, as well as for the public. I'm sitting here, and I've heard neighbors, I've read a lot of the emails going back and forth, and waiting to really understand, which I have not been able to get a grasp on, what is the legitimate reason for not wanting housing there. And I'm saying housing, affordable or not, I'm saying housing there. I haven't been able to really get a grasp on what is that legitimate reason. People have to live somewhere. One of the things I smile and chuckle at myself at is here we go again. We, as a county, I mean, certainly as many people have said here, we can just sell the property and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But we've chosen to be very deliberate in figuring out something that might fit with the neighborhood that's going to meet statutes that we laid out in our comprehensive plan. We're going through the same thing with the old library. Could have just sold a property, but no, we have to go ask for expressions of interest and have to deliberate through all of those. Because we are concerned legislators, we're not just legislators who sit here and say, oh, you know, it is what it is, we sell, and, you know, if a hotel goes up there, so be it. I live in the city of Ithaca. There is all kinds of development going up all around me that I don't necessarily agree with. You know, sometimes I think if I see one more hotel, you know, I'm going to choke somebody. But it's going up all around. And what we're doing is we're pushing out housing for people. And this is close enough for me for people to be able to get some housing. And people who need affordable housing. So I've been struggling with really trying to understand what is the opposition to this. I've heard from people who have said... I've heard you. I've read your emails of all of that. I've watched this project go from being something that, when I first saw it, thought, oh, good God, this is ridiculous, to being brought back down from, what, 78 or 80 units down to 50. I think that's what it is now. I don't remember what it is. 58. I've watched it increase the amount of green space that will be left. All the things that I've been hearing from neighbors that, you know, it's not going to happen. Somebody mentioned the recreation and so on and so forth. So I've watched all of these things happen, listening to some of what has come from neighbors. And I don't remember who it is that said, it might have been you, Dan, yesterday said, you know, what is it that the neighbors want aside from saying, no, we don't want housing in our neighborhood, we don't want anything there at all. You know, what is it that people want? And I'm yet to really hear that. So, except don't put it here, it's not good for low-income people. So it's all right. I'm fine with people not caring for what I have to say. That's okay. I've listened to everyone, too. And so I'm at that point where, you know, I don't see any reason for me to not support this right now. I haven't heard a reason for me to not support this right now. And I'm just being straight up and honest with you all. I've watched the emails go back and forth, and some of them, frankly, are very offensive. And it's just, it's troubling, and I haven't heard any reason. So my vote will be to support the resolution that's before us tonight. Yeah, that's where I am.
All right. And I would like to move to a vote. Martha?
I have something new to say.
Please be crisp.
Dan, this issue about the approval of the project by the town of Ithaca, early on, way back when, this issue about pedestrian and transit improvements were part of negotiations with the town that Ed and the planning department went through to try to improve, to try to satisfy the town's concerns. And so there were the things that were added to the project, and that's what that refers to. I want to say to the residents that this is that if we don't, if this project doesn't go forward, it's not going to improve traffic on West Hill. It's not going to improve traffic on West Hill. And I think what you need is traffic to improve on West Hill. I'm going to tell a little bit about something that I was involved in as I was the last few months of being chair of the legislature last year. In response to some variety of concerns from Town of Ithaca residents on West Hill, Herb Engman, supervisor of the town, contacted me and the mayor of Ithaca and said, we should put together something, a white paper, the explanation of all the things that the county, town, and city have done together to analyze and try to address development pressures, and including traffic on West Hill and other pressures. And we started working on kind of a list of what are the possible things, and we started to involve staff. And it was, you know, it seemed like a great idea, something that we all, that the three entities really wanted to work on, staff wanted to work on. It suffered, I think, from a transition because I left, and then, you know, a number of other things came into play. It seemed that it sort of fell by the wayside. But there was an initial list of things that could support, that could improve traffic in the near, middle, and long term, things that could perhaps be done quickly, for example, asking the State Department of Transportation to really analyze the traffic light systems that go east, west, and north, south, because I think there's some real manageable, fixable issues simply to do with how the traffic lights are timed. It seems they haven't studied it since they built those roads, and since they've changed the octopus, it's high time that they fix, you know, as bad as the traffic is coming down 96, if you try to go from, oh, say, the farmer's market to Wegmans on a Saturday, forget it. We've all been there. So there are complicated problems. So we had this list. The list included something that the city development director, Tace Van Court, told me got to be 15 years ago, that what they should have really done was put another bridge across at Court Street. And, you know, wouldn't have necessarily been the whole big elevated highway, et cetera, but if there'd just been another road to go across the inlet at Court Street, it would divide that traffic in half. I thought we had agreement, you know, informal agreement that we were going to pursue this among the city, town, and county. I've lately heard there's some other issues. Ed and I have been corresponding a little bit. I hope that we can resurrect that conversation, because I think what we need to do is improve the traffic on West Hill. And, you know, one unit or another unit of housing is not going to make the difference that we all need. We need some structural analysis and some real things to be fixed. And so I'm going to support this. I think I'm really going to try to get back into this conversation about the three-way conversation on how to address traffic on West Hill as well.
Jim, you left your seat. Do you still want to talk, or can I move to a vote?
No, Mike, I was going to request the roll call vote, as a matter of fact.
All right. Does that mean we're ready to vote? All right. On the motion, on the resolution authorizing NRP Properties, LLC, to submit application for project on property located on Harris B. Dates Drive in the town of Ithaca, as amended, we'll have a roll call vote. Please call the roll.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm abstaining.
She's abstaining.
Or recusing.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
I'd like to pass it with time at this time.
Why?
With respect, I think that's fair. I think to we all, I mean, a roll call vote disadvantages people according to a particular letter of the alphabet.
The rotation is changed every meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
That's what
Well, I will vote one way now. If you will not announce the final vote until I've had a chance to reconsider.
I'll be glad to do that. I will hold the announcement of the final vote, giving anybody an opportunity to change their vote.
So I'll vote no now.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. We'll hold the vote. Does anyone wish to change their vote? Then please announce the vote.
9 ayes, 3 noes, 1 abstention.
The motion passes. We will now take a 10-minute recess.
Thank you.
Be back at 8:30. Report by the County Administrator, Joe Mariana.
I'm going to pass.
Okay. You want us to come back to you?
No, I was going to pass
report
anyway.
Report from the County Attorney, Jonathan.
You want to see how the rest of the people vote?
No report.
You don't need my duly alone. It's their prerogative.
Did you say no report?
No report.
No. Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
Good, I'll take their time. I have a 45-minute report on GASB.
We're all ears, Rick. Go ahead.
No, I'd just like to report tonight on the sale of our bands, bond, the anticipation notes that we've conducted and sold yesterday. The total offering was $9,584,000 in these short-term notes, and they have a maturity of 1 year. Approximately $5,800,000 of the proceeds from the sale went to refinance the one-year bond, the anticipation notes from last year, and the remainder, which is $3.8 million, went to finance new projects, which include the Human Services Building expansion project, the Public Safety Building renovation, or the jail expansion, and the reconstruction of roads and bridges. We were able to sell the bonds at a great interest rate, 0.182%.
Together.
They'd like that part of it.
0.182.
In comparison, the bands we sold last year had a net interest rate of 0.358%. So it's about half of what the rate was last year. To give you an idea of what the actual cost is, the total interest payment for our $9.5 million band will be less than $17,500.
Wow.
We are planning another bond issue for later this year. These will be long-term bonds for the following purposes: $1.6 million for facilities improvements, $3.92 million for bridge replacements, $3.24 million for road and highway construction, or the Ellis Hollow Road Phase 2. Those three projects, as a subtotal added together, total $8.76 million, and that would be considered the new projects portion of the bond issue. In addition to that, we'll be bonding for the TC3 master plan, the county's portion, and that master plan is currently under construction. Our portion would be $2.185 million. There's also the potential refunding of three bond issues that, if the rates hold as they are right now, we would be refunding the 2005 bonds, our 2007 bonds, and our 2010 bonds, which totaled $21.5 million. Adding all those projects and the refunding together, we would do a total bond issue of $32,445,000. We should be bringing the resolutions authorizing these projects and bonds to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee on July 28th and to the full legislature for approval on August 5th.
Good news. Rick, we expect at least as good a report next sales tax time.
Nah.
Martha Robertson.
Rick, is there any savings in the budget? Did we have a plan for for the 0.182%. Did we have a number in the budget?
No, it's still in time. We don't pay that until next July, and so we now have time to put it into next year's budget, the actual accurate number.
So we didn't have any number that was an estimate that now we can...
No, unfortunately.
All right, I was trying. Okay, thanks. That's really great news.
Any more questions for Rick? Thank you, Rick. That was the high point of our evening so far. Let's go to the consent agenda. There are no appointments on consent agenda. There's one resolution out of Health and Human Services Committee, ID 4940, authorization to accept funds and budget adjustment for the City of Ithaca, from the City of Ithaca, Urban Renewal Agency, for fair housing choice services rendered by the Office of Human Rights. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Carol Chalk, seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. All right, we go to Public Safety Committee. Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to correct the Finance Director in one thing. The jail project was a renovation. It wasn't an expansion.
Thank you.
Okay. Right. You said it correctly once and incorrectly once, but that's okay. The Public Safety Committee met this Monday. We had a report from Christine Muss, who is the Broome County Traffic Safety Program Coordinator. She's also the Regional Traffic Safety Coordinator, which I was not aware that there was such a thing until she came. Prior to this, as we all know, anybody that's ever been on public safety, we get a series of traffic safety grants that come in, and they are applied for individually through different departments within the county and compiled at that one meeting. Part of her presentation was that she is available not only for locating grants, but also coordinating them, and she's perfectly willing to do that. She does come back once a year, but is available for assistance even beyond that. So that's a good thing. The sheriff's report had a brief report. And if you remember our last legislative meeting, we voted to accept funds for license plate readers for that program. A little more explanation on that was given at this meeting. There was also a very interesting report from both Pat Michel and Sergeant Ziegenfuss on the active shooter training that they had. I think it was last month at the Department of Probation, and a lot of good information came out of that. If anybody's got any questions, we can certainly try to answer those. The Jail Alternatives Task Force, they were present. They are trying to compile their work. They are anticipating coming back to public safety with some recommendations in the not-too-distant future, and the goal is to get those back prior to the budget deliberations this fall. And that was pretty much the sum of that meeting, and I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
Peter Stein.
What, pray tell, is the active shooter program?
Okay. It is a simulated exercise where, and it's all supervised by the police, where they simulate an active shooter going into, in this case, the DSS building at 7 o'clock on a Thursday morning and simulate and you know a person coming into that department with a gun. We probably shouldn't go into a lot of the details of it other than to say it's a good exercise for the employees that are there on how to react to a situation like that. I'm sure they have a much greater appreciation of the speed and the seriousness of how an incident like that happens. The most beneficial part of any sort of exercise like that is the debriefing afterwards, the discussion of it. I personally was not present for any of it, but they raved about the training that they had. And maybe I can defer to Joe on some of that because I know you were present.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add, Brian, is that this was the culmination of about a year's worth of prior things that happened that led to this point, beginning with the tabletop exercise where people kind of thought about the what-ifs. There's a FEMA tape that people can watch that help prepare, that tell them what to do. And it was taken in gradual steps toward this simulation that occurred the other day. So, again, I think Brian has captured you certainly understand the intent. The only other thing I would add is this really has provided a good learning experience for the entire organization. It's something that's given us a good template to begin applying in other departments, including the patient approach of beginning slowly and then leading to a simulation like this in other departments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
I do not have a report tonight. WDIC will meet next week, I believe. Let me just double check and be sure. Yes, we will meet on July 20-somebody. 23rd.
Okay. Any questions? Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, chair.
Yeah, I'll report on the July 8th meeting of the HHS. Number of items were discussed. First off, the renovation of the mental health building. The mental health building is 25 years old, and it no longer, the construction, the layout no longer supports very well the activities of the building. The lobby is very confusing for those who are not familiar with the building. You walk in there. I remember when I walked in there for the first time, I had no idea which way to go or where things were and so forth. The internal layout could better, if changed, could better support the staff who are working on similar issues. They tend to be dispersed from farther from each other than is ideal. There are also security and confidentiality issues in the present building. And all of these have led to hiring an architect to redesign the building. The cost will be approximately $500,000, and that will be bonded. COFA, the Office for the Aging, we had a report from COFA, from Lisa Holmes, about a senior housing preference study, which I think has been distributed. Let me just tell you the highlights in it. It was quite a good study. They had 330 people that they interviewed in their 60s, and here's what they got. Half of those people intend to move in the next 5 years, and what is that? 90% will stay in the area. Only 10% intend to leave Tompkins County. Those that are moving, 60% of them intend to live in the city and 10% in the town of Ithaca. Their preferences are more or less evenly divided between senior housing, condos, and apartments. One thing of interest is the question of how much do they think they're going to pay for these three things. And for condos, and they intend to pay something between $100,000 and $250,000. And for rent, they intend to pay something between $500 and $2,000 a month. Our guess is that they're underestimating what it's going to cost. The consistent themes that they hear in the narrative that they give to the people to fill out from 100 people is that we need, none of these will be great surprises to you, that we need more affordable housing, that we need options for the middle class, and that we need condos. Those are the things that, that came up most. Human Rights Committee, Karen Baer is the head, and she reported on a program that you just approved in the consent agenda, a program where the that they are doing for the city and the Urban Renewal Agency to ensure that the county law that bans discrimination for a variety of reasons are prohibited, that law is being obeyed. And they intend to do some sort of a study to make sure that that law is obeyed. And this is interesting, and I found sort of surprising, that there has been a considerable increase, apparently, in discrimination against returning veterans. I have no explanation for that, and I found that sort of surprising. Youth Services, Amy Hendricks is the chair. There's been a change. The New York State Office of FNC, what's that mean? Family and Children's, thanks, Services, has changed its funding stream. It used to be that the funding went individually to municipalities, and now what it's going to do is all funding will flow through the county to the municipalities. Sounds like a good idea to me. I imagine that the county ought to be in a better situation to make those decisions than somebody in Albany. Unfortunately, Youth Services will face a considerable gap of 1.5 FTEs when a 10-year federal grant expires, and they're going to have to deal with that. The youth employment program was not fully subscribed. They had an additional 30 slots were not filled. But there is still a list. Despite that, there is a list of 52 youths that they have seeking a summer job with no open jobs available. DSS, Patricia Carey, the chair, she reported on the fact that that DSS has scheduled satellite offices in Enfield and Trumansburg and hopefully Groton, which will be. That will be given several times a month to inform residents of those areas of the services that are offered by DSS. They've reconfigured their office to speed up the processing of food stamps, and they have learned about an increase in rent for residents of the IHA, and that will become a financial obligation of DSS. They don't understand why the rent has gone up, but we'll hear next month. Report from the Health Department, Frank Krupa. The department is looking into the possibility of regulating or banning e-cigarettes. This is an issue. The Tompkins County could do this by itself. New York State, at the same time, is looking into that, and there are considerable pro and con arguments having to do with people's liberty to do what they want and the dangers of e-cigarettes. I was surprised myself that they consider e-cigarettes so dangerous, because I know that in tobacco it's not the nicotine, it's the tar that is the thing that's responsible for the large death rate of having to do with smoking. But they feel that the e-cigarettes are apt to rebuild the population of smokers that we have worked so hard to reduce. And also they feel that the e-cigarettes are can be used and will be used as a magnet for young people if they're in fact not banned, to get them to an intake of nicotine. And apparently there really is not a whole lot of data existing as to how dangerous nicotine is in the doses, and the doses are unregulated at the moment. I would like to, so that's my report, but Patricia Carey handed out something that I found quite moving, and I would like to take just a couple of minutes of your time to read part of a document which she handed out, which was a graduation speech by a woman from a family treatment court. And it made me feel good, so I'd like to read. It's rather long, but I have four paragraphs I'd like to read. My life before I signed up with Family Treatment Court was filled with unhappiness, anger, loss, and confusion. I had a lot of hate and resentment. I just hated myself, ! But a year ago today, I didn't think I would be standing here. I still can't believe how far I've come in this past year, but I could say that I'm glad with the progress that I've made so far and continue to make on a daily basis with determination. Some of you from the outside looking in may not realize all the time and effort it takes for alcoholics and addicts like myself to complete any program like this one, and that refers to Family Treatment Court. And then there are some of you who will go through the same struggle day in and day out I've been where some of you are at today. I lost my two oldest children to foster care and then adoption. I have to say that I'm really thankful for this program. It really helped me open my eyes and helped me realize that my life is worth so much more. And then she goes on to thank the efforts of various of the counselors in Family Treatment Court, who she says rescued her from a bad future. So I felt good about hearing that. That's
thank
all
you, Peter.
I have to report.
Nice to hear that. Brian has a question.
Yep. And thanks. I'll thank you again, too, for sharing that. Summer youth jobs in my district are very important to a lot of kids in the village. So I'm a little bit confused by what you said, and if you could explain. You said there was 30, there was a shortage, there were 30 kids, a shortage of subscribers, which to me means kids, like the 30 kids just don't want to work, or is it
a shortage of funding? That's the other way around. There are 32 youth seeking a summer job, and there are no openings. Unfilled, people who want a summer job.
Okay. Was the funding cut, or it's just you have a greater number of kids seeking jobs, and there aren't any?
I don't know. My understanding of it was that there are kids seeking jobs, and there were no jobs open to be filled. Okay. Anybody else? Is that what they said, do you think?
I just want to know how much, if it was cut, how much it was cut.
It wasn't cut. We actually increased funding, and there were extra slots that were all filled. And in addition to that, there were even more kids that wanted jobs. That's how I understood it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Peter, for the report. Let's move on to facilities and infrastructure. Dave McKenna is vice chair. Did you have a report, Dave?
No report. We meet next week,
okay.
Monday.
Thank you. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank.
No. No. Yes. So the Economic Development Committee met on July 7th, and we talked about we had a presentation on the priority trails strategy. That also, I guess, went to peak, and we'll be coming here, I believe, next meeting. Is that correct, Kathy? Thank you. So I'm not going to talk any more about that. Stay tuned. We heard a first overview from SCPB on the 2015 tourism program budget as proposed by STPB, but we did not act on that. We will be coming back to that at our next meeting. We heard a really interesting presentation on the effort to create a new museum in Stuart Park. Perhaps some of you heard about this, that would celebrate the brief but rich history of filmmaking in Ithaca. This was the silent film era. There were some 100 films made out of both studios at in a building in Stuart Park, but essentially using the wonderful natural landscape of our community. And that in recent years, many of us have become more aware of some of these films. Maybe you've caught some screenings when they've done it, but we've barely begun to tell that story. There is a group that is attempting to put together an organization that will ultimately create a museum, and they actually recently became chartered as a museum by the state. They're attempting to secure the building that is currently best known as the bathrooms in Stuart Park. If you go to the large pavilion and need to use the facilities, that building is also mostly used for storage of equipment for the maintenance of the park. And part of the deal is they have to relocate that and work with the city to create something that where they can do those functions. And then the building apparently has a lot of potential architecturally and would really be a huge asset. And this effort is very much part of the larger effort, basically, to restore Stuart Park. So that was exciting. Then we moved into a presentation from Heather Filiberto of TCAD talking about companies that are part of our local economy that have been supported and basically had the assistance of TCAD, but which many of us may not necessarily be familiar. And she quickly ran through a laundry list of about 10 companies. One of them was Dairy One, which, as you may recall, in the IDA, we had a proposal recently. That's a traditional local agricultural support cooperative. But a bunch of high-tech companies such as I'm going to mess this up. Rionix, Encodema, Advanced Design Consulting, Data Bound Solutions, Binoptics. Do all of you know about these companies? I didn't, and they're doing good things. And the third was the category was something you may be familiar with, is sort of value-added food businesses, the piggery, which is just going great guns right now. Started a few years ago and is now distributing pork products as far away as New York City. Party headphones, I'd never heard of, but it's a growing thing for specialized headphones that can be used in party situations. And, of course, Ithaca Beer, which I was partial to because it's in my district. I went there last week, and I was just blown away by the business they're doing. They've come literally from nothing, and they're just going great guns. Those are the businesses. And Heather also, importantly, sort of gave a sense of kind of the criteria that TCAD, and the approach they use. They're not about the business of trying to find businesses from outside and attract them into our community and steal them from other. They really want people who want to be here because they value our community. And they want to help people create businesses and grow and stay, maintain that sense of connectedness to our community and ultimately create good jobs with growth potential and benefits, et cetera. Which leads me to the last thing. We have a major employer in town that I am embarrassed to say I don't know as much about as I would like to. It is the largest for-profit employer, BorgWarner, up on Warren Road. And there's been some interest in maybe doing a tour of their facility just to learn more about that. So Heather has made arrangements. I just got an email this afternoon that the date had been changed, so this may or may not work, but I'm going to throw it out to you anyway. It's Friday, September 12th from 2 to 4. You are all invited and encouraged to join us on that. That's in September. But because in August we will be actually having our next meeting, but not on the normal date. We are doing a combined August-September meeting of our committee, and it's scheduled for Monday, August 18th at 3:30. And that is my report. If there are any questions.
Jim Dennis, Peter. Peter Stein, then Carol Chalk.
I have a comment. Good job doing the report. Well, I just wanted to say one thing, that in some of the documents received from Heather Filiberto, there was one line that talked about a shortage of natural gas for development that is now underway, and they're having some difficulty. It could halt development because there is not adequate natural gas to fuel the development that is taking place or will be taking place. I think that
just to clarify, Jim, that's not that there's not enough gas, but the capacity in the pipes.
There's not whatever
where they are.
Natural gas to be able to fuel some future developments. I think the county and others, we have to recognize that and begin to think about how to mitigate that problem.
Peter?
You know, just a comment that I've thought about. Apparently, Ithaca was, at some relatively short period, a major film producer. It's my understanding that The Perils of Pauline, which was one of the early serials, was filmed here. And there was extensive use made of gorges because Pauline was always falling off gorges or being tied down to a railroad track. But something that's really amazing is, why in the world would they come to Ithaca? It's the worst place. It's like Los Angeles is the best place because the sun shines all the time. But Ithaca, for making movies back then, it must have been very difficult because, I don't know if you've noticed, but the sun does not shine all the time.
I have noticed that, Peter, and they eventually figured that out, if this museum comes to be, you will hear the story of sort of what they went through and how they moved out.
Carol, then Jim.
Boy, Peter, have you ever seen Dr. Zhivago? It couldn't be filmed in L.A. I just want to distinguish that what Heather was talking about was the distribution lines to businesses and homes. I want to just a few tidbits that I picked up from this meeting that were very interesting. The tourism budget, for those who are following it, although revenues are up, their smallest cut to programs is going to have to be a 3.5% cut, and it goes down from there. The Wharton Studios plan doesn't eliminate bathrooms. There still will be the bathrooms, but an incredible museum in the rest of the space, if they can do it. And the piggery is now supporting 15 local farms, pig farms, and plus others, and they need more. The piggery, they sell other things at their store, but they are processing. And Ithaca Beer, which we helped to start, is now selling in 13 states. Those were just tidbits that I picked up from that meeting that I found fascinating.
Jim?
I know why they came to Ithaca, to make the movies, because back in the day when Peter Trowbridge did the first study to do the movie studio down there and the city council, they came here because they vacationed here. There was a connection to the university, and they liked the area, and the guy who was the director brought his girlfriend here, and they shot the movies here. So it was show business as the best kind of show business, you know. Had to do with girlfriends and holidays.
And that's a truth.
Moving right along.
Before you go, Mike.
You are turning into Frank.
Yes, Will.
Very diplomatic.
Yes, Will.
So, as I was taking off the buildings, there was one other that I was unfamiliar with, but it sounded like a really neat business. It's called Grainful, and it's basically a growing business that's going to be creating entrees that'll be frozen, made from specially prepared oats, and they have a process for processing though that essentially can transform oats into any imaginable kind of dish, and so I didn't want to ignore them. That concludes my report, though. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Will. Nathan, we've disposed of your resolutions. Do you still have a report?
Well, actually, I was hoping we could talk about the octopus and things that happened before. Yeah. I mean, especially anything that happened before I was born, because I just, you know, I don't know a lot about it because I didn't,
oh, we don't
I didn't,
hear
I didn't exist. All right. Anyway, no, I'm fine. The Government Operations Committee meets on Tuesday, July 22nd. And the agenda is good, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you. The old Library Committee will meet again tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. July 16th at 3:30. Two things. We're going to try to set up a public meeting. We've had some requests to have people in the neighborhood and others come in and talk to us about what they'd like to see happen at the old library site. Apparently there are at least two and possibly a third neighborhood association that has some interest, and that's Fall Creek and DeWitt Park and possibly an Albany Street.
No, Albany Neighborhood Association.
Neighborhood associations, yes. So we're going to be... Pardon me. We're going to be interested in hearing from them, and we'll have to set that date for that meeting, and the location will be published later. The other thing we did, we began discussing the RFEIs, and we will continue those tomorrow. But I have a bit of news. It was on my desk when I got down here tonight. I have a letter addressed to me as chair. From Paul Mazzarella, the Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing. Dear Mr. Lane, this letter is to advise you that the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services hereby withdraws its expression of interest for redevelopment of the old Tompkins County Library. This is an incredibly exciting project, as evidenced by the intense interest shown by both developers and the general public. INHS very much wants to see a high-quality housing project developed on this site, but regrets that it can no longer pursue the role of developer. As I'm sure you're aware, INHS recently acquired the site of the former Neighborhood Pride grocery store. This will be the largest project that INHS has ever developed and represents opportunities that are equal or greater than those of the old library site. Unfortunately, the combined scale and timing of both projects is likely beyond our current staffing and financial capacity, so we are to make a choice about which project to pursue. Since we now own the Neighborhood Pride site, the choice was obvious. Very much appreciate the interest of Tompkins County as shown to our proposal. I regret we could not advance it, but I'm sure that a highly worthy project will be developed there. So that's hot off the press, folks. So, and then there were five.
Oh, dear.
Mike?
Yes.
Well, can you remind us again what is going to be the time frame moving forward, and will the committee be doing sort of objective criteria as was called for tonight?
We're going to finish the discussions in executive session of certainly the other four. We'll be talking roundtable. We're going to be gathering more input. I continue to await a response from my request from the city to the mayor and one of the council people there about a list of sites that might be available for others, some of the other proposers that we could make them aware of. Haven't yet received them, although promises of that were made. We know that the construction of the human services building addition for the day reporting center has been set back a couple of months. So right now we have a couple of months that we aren't right under the gun to push forward on that. So we're going to take a little bit of time and look at a little more of the community input on this. I can't tell you an exact date, but it's probably been moved back at least a month, maybe two.
Thank you.
From the original schedule. Anyone else? Carol Chalk, Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee.
Yes. The committee will not meet tomorrow, those members. We there wasn't enough on the agenda, or enough active sign-ups for the agenda to pull in people from the wilds of Lansing and Newfield and the town of Ithaca and staff. So any business that we, you know, that may come up in the interim, maybe we'll need a short meeting before the next legislature meeting. But barring that, we would, our next meeting would be August 20th at 12:30. So people should put on their that on their calendars that that is you know, still is scheduled for 12:30 to 2:30 on August 20th. For those who have followed PEAK in, boy, all of the years that I can remember, this is a rare opportunity to take a break from our agendas that are usually quite thick.
Anything more for Carol? Thank you, Carol. Back to me for charter review. We met on July 2nd and continued and completed our review of the sections having to do with the public works divisions. We did pass a motion in the committee to move, to add to the presentation of the full legislature in the proposed revisions to the charter, that we would recommend having departments instead of divisions, and not having a, and we and delete the section that has to do with the Commissioner of Public Works. So that's the committee's feeling about it, and that's how we will proceed. Of course, this full legislature at some point in the future will get to look at all the recommendations. Anything I can answer? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim.
Thank you, Michael. We are meeting the 28th of July at 4, and we will be considering the $32 million worth of bond resolutions in one big bag. Okay? And that concludes my report.
Questions for Jim? Minutes of meeting of July 1st. Someone want to move those? Moved by Martha. Is there a second? Seconded by Dan. Discussion? Dooley?
Well, I'm sure that Kathy will correct on page one President Haynes' name, but I want to call attention to page three of the minutes. And I have a question because I don't remember the answer to this. At what point was privilege of the floor for legislators removed from the minutes?
Hmm. 1981.
A report on them. I don't remember. They used to. It used to appear in the minutes, not just notes, and now it's gone. And I. So that's my question I wanted to ask.
No, Kathy, you want to respond to that?
Privilege of the floor for legislators has not been in the minutes since the new policy was adopted.
I guess I've found somewhere it was. So, okay. When the chairman reports, that's also not in the minutes. And this last set of minutes, you reported on something that I thought was of interest because you went to the Regional Economic Development Committee. And I'm so that, I think, was worth including in the minutes. There were...
I didn't ask for that. It would, should appear in the notes.
The... when the county administrator reported, he talked about bringing resolutions to the July budget meeting, which was an anticipation of what Rick talked about tonight. That seemed to me like something that should be in the minutes. And I could go on. There were other things which seemed to me worthy of the minutes in terms of actions or notice of actions. So I just wanted to take this time to say I will be voting no again, and I get very tired of voting no, but every now and then I want to say why.
Carol?
Yeah, the question of things like reports by the chair with important items or special presentations have come up in a couple of committees that I've been on, some that have no resolutions that were acted upon, so it looks like you just met to do nothing. So it came up that the appropriate place to deal with that may be, rather than on each individual basis, you know, or by bringing it up here at the legislature, would be to ask government operations to take, now that we've lived with the minutes policy for a while, to look at not going back to the old way of doing things, but at whether just the listing of any particular items that are deemed important by the chair and or just a listing of special presentations especially be included with minutes. So, you know, Ed Marks gave a presentation about affordable housing, or TCAD came and gave a special presentation on whatever it was. Sometimes it's not even people who, not that anybody who reports to the legislature, and they give of their time, and then they're not even mentioned that they attended and gave a presentation. So not necessarily asking staff to interpret what they said, but just list that it happened. So that would be, if it be the pleasure of the chair, rather than deal with it here.
Peter, we'll duly, and then let's vote.
I would recommend that we not do that. I think that the current minutes policy has been a big success. Remember, all of these things are in the notes. They don't have to be in the minutes. There's a record of them. There's a record that will last forever. And the whole point of the of putting them in the notes is that so that we don't have discussions on the floor about what was done in the minutes. And so the point is that the minutes only have action items because that's what has to be there. And I think we should stay with that.
Dooley?
I neglected to mention page 11, which I will call your attention to, or I'll just read it. This is a GO committee. I was the vice chair. I had no report. I didn't know Nathan was not going to be there. But then it goes on. Ms. McBean Claiborne spoke of the comments that were made earlier in the meeting with regard to the rules for the public speaking under privilege of the floor, and said she agrees with the comments that were made by legislator Robertson. And she asked whether the committee will be discussing this further. There's nothing in the minutes under privilege of the floor to indicate what Ms. Robertson talked about. So that's the kind of thing that makes for internal inconsistencies.
Okay, thank you. On the minutes, all those in favor of approval, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Any unfinished business? Motion to adjourn by Peters. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Thank you all. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Michelle.